I should have killed myself when he put it in me. But I was weak.
Eve was weak. Eve was weak.
Oh, same. Hey, everybody. Welcome to Dirty Pillows. I'm Chris Fox.
And I'm Maddie Glitterati.
This is the episode you've all been waiting for.
Because we fell off the face of the earth last week.
Also, I mean, I don't know if any... Oftentimes, I have to remind Maddie, like, hey, we need to record. And it seems like it's like a, oh, yeah.
What?
Yeah.
Just calling me out on the air. What?
I mean, we can edit that out if you want. But it does seem like a surprise sometimes, like, oh, I forgot we have a thing. I was just thinking, like, how angry I would be. Angry. If I was listening to a countdown list and then they were like, and number two is, wait, this one's going a little long. Because I felt like in the moment, you guys, I was with you because I was like, I know this has been really long. We probably should cut it.
Yeah.
But we got to keep going. And sometimes I'll just think, like, I'll just drink a little bit more coffee and risk having my head explode.
Or heart.
Yeah, my heart probably would happen before my
head. Hummingbird heartbeat.
Yeah. And just keep going. But I was like, yeah, no, we should let it breathe. We'll just get back into it. But...
I mean, you were dead to the world last week.
To be fair, everyone, I got really sick. Like, really sick to the point where Maddie was worried and, like, didn't want to go to work because I had such a fever. So...
I was nervous. I was nervous there for a hot second.
So podcast second, me dying first, but only by like a little bit. It's really close. And I know that this episode in general, even besides being like a toppy top type countdown list, has also been a long time coming because we have joked for all of season one and like, and partly through season two now that like we are named after this movie and we haven't talked about it like at all.
Very
like,
white eat shit.
We just kind of pretend it doesn't exist and it's our namesake and it's a very important film. So
it is.
Most of this episode today will be about Carrie.
Oh, finally. We've talked. We said it was coming. We are finally doing it.
We are finally doing it. And we're going to talk about all sorts of Carrie. Like, Carrie's through time. We're going to carry you through the Carrie's.
We may get carried away.
No. It's going to get, guys. Turn it off now. Turn it off now or else it's not going to stop. But before we jump into Carrie Landia, before we get carried away, before we carry off this new episode, let's talk about what's new.
Yeah, what's new?
Hey, poopy pants, what's new?
Well, since last we spoke, we were very excited about seeing The Batman.
The Batman.
That's the voice that I make Maddie use in the bedroom.
Hello. That's my bedroom voice.
It's so sexy. Do you want to hear mine?
Yeah.
Wait, do Batman again.
Hello, Chris.
Oh, hi there.
Let me tell you, it's a panty dropper. Yeah. It works every time. Just like a light switch.
You sure are looking pretty today.
Yeah. Nothing gets my gears going.
I'm naked.
Like that.
Speaking of getting gears going, the Batman movie did feature some really wonderful shirtless work by Mr. Sparkle Vampire and
Mr. Pattinson,
Mr. Edward Cullen. He
still have never seen a Twilight movie and I don't plan on it.
Now I just want to go back and watch everything because I just adore that boy so much.
No, I'm okay.
He's so, yeah, he's not hot in that way. The Twilight movies. You know how I feel about glitter, first of all.
I don't know.
I don't like glitter being in my bed.
It's only my name.
I don't like glitter being on my face.
It's only me.
It's cute on you because it makes you sparkle.
Sparkle pony.
You literally just turned your head and there was like a little sparkle on the side of your head. It's just part of the
It's everywhere.
Ether. But, yeah. You know, I did like that they were like, wow, Robert Pattinson like really is the worst Batman, because it took him like 7 years to be a bat from being a vampire. Or no, he's like the worst. He's the worst vampire because it took him so long to turn into a bat.
I was like, I think he's a really good Batman.
You can watch like The Lighthouse and like Good Time and whatever that movie is with Juliette Binoche, like masturbates him on a spaceship. I forget what that's called.
Oh.
High something. High life.
High come.
Yeah, but it's good. I forget what it's called. I really actually don't like that movie at all, that space movie. Oh, but
okay. You don't like space movies.
No, I don't like space.
No space.
You guys, why would anyone ever go to space? Like, what's the real reason? I know everyone's like to see that they, I don't understand why you would go. And there's no documented movie timey truth as to why you want to go to space. Okay, for example, we are going to go to Florida next week on vacation.
We are.
We're going to Fort Lauderdale, where gay people go when they're older. And I'm excited because I'm older and I want to be there. So we're going to Florida. You might say, hey, Florida does a lot of bullshit and there's like not great gay stuff going on right now.
We're
just going to go and say gay to everyone we see. And like, so that happens, right? Or like, you know, alligators cross the street there. Like there's stuff about Florida that's like, maybe don't go there. Or there's the movie Scarface. Seems like it. Maybe not. Isn't fun.
Fly away.
But there's documented proof that it is fun because you can watch The Birdcage. Like, Florida can show you the good time. Like, I've seen many things that look fun in Florida.
I'm pretty sure both those same type of people in The Birdcage still live there.
Yeah. Why not? You live there forever. So, like, in Florida, Robin Williams is still around. Like, Florida just is different. But you can see through the negative depictions sometimes really good ones. In space, that doesn't exist. There's no happy space movie. I would wager the only happy...
What about the Jetsons?
That's not a movie. Well, maybe they had like an animated movie, but that's a cartoon.
It's not real, Maddie.
Let's talk about reality. Like, what movies? I would wager to say that Guardians of the Galaxy makes space look kind of fun.
Yeah, it does.
And that's it. But nobody is being a scientist is going up there to be like Guardians of the Galaxy.
I mean, I want to go to space. I think it's... I love the idea.
What do you... Why?
It's untapped. You know, it's just... It's,
okay, so you fly up there. Like 3 months later, you like looked at... The same thing you'd technically be looking at when you look up from the sky, but like... No. Just like blackness with like
little dots. I think it puts things into perspective on how small we really are.
But you could go to the planetarium and have the same experience. Like, I've had that as a kid. Like, when they go...
Right.
And they're like, now let's go out to this galaxy and this one.
Yeah.
And we are nothing, you know? And you leave and you're like a kid at another field trip going like, I exist for no reason whatsoever. The planetarium just told me so.
To see, the goth started at a very young age.
I think it was the planetarium's fault when I became a goth. Like, I was just kind of like, nothing matters. Listening to The Cure and going to the planetarium made me decide like a lot of things in life, probably. But I don't know. You guys message us and let us know. If you want to go to space, tell me why. I don't even know where this tangent came from, or what that has to do with anything. But, Robert Pattinson jacked off in space. That was one of my rants. I apologize. So what did you think about the Batman when you saw it?
I thoroughly enjoyed myself.
Yeah, right?
You know, I mean, I think I saw a meme today that was, it was like Robert Pattinson is the Batman, and it was some guy like putting on eyeliner, and it was like Gotham, and then everyone was dead, and it was like everyone.
Wait, what?
like everyone died in Gotham because Batman was too busy putting on eyeliner.
Oh, he was busy.
He was busy, but I appreciate it because from a very young age, I was always like, okay, but where is he's obviously wearing eye makeup? When did he put that on?
Same.
I've always been like, when did that happen? And why is it not there now? That takes a lot of effort to get all that off. My favorite look is last night's eyeshadow.
Yeah, like if you did did a big chunky black make, because he's not even just doing like some liner.
No,
he's doing black paint.
Yeah.
And I know that just because that's my kind of eyeliner nowadays. Like, yeah. When I transitioned from in my 30s to 40s, I lost a lot of eye space to decorate around. Because your eyelids just grow over your eye, your like hooded brow goes over your eyelid, and then you like don't have a top line anymore. So now I just do like this kind of, you would call it a smoky eye if I took more than 3 minutes, but I do it quick. I could be a good sidekick for Batman because I can do an eye paint super fast, like 45 seconds. But yeah, I thought the same thing. I've thought the same thing since Michael Keaton. Because yeah. You can clearly see that there's like black eye paint on
that there. There's skin.
But
there.
He's taken his mask. He's like in Batman Returns when he rips his mask off and there's no eye makeup on.
Yeah.
And that freaked me out.
Because men don't wear makeup.
Yeah. I want a universe where he always has makeup on. So it was definitely the.
So,
it was like.
So when, I appreciated that little touch.
Mm-hmm, that was good.
You know, yeah. And. It was very moody. It was very dark. It was very long.
Yeah.
It was a long film.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, like, there was a point sitting through there right around, like, 2 hour 15, two and a half hours, where, like, I could just see out of my periphery, like, high school boys getting, like, antsy in their seats, like, having to move. And I was like, I'm right there with you. And then I fell asleep for 5 minutes.
Oh, no. I shockingly didn't. And, you know, I fall asleep during action DC Marvel movies.
Fainting goat. Fainting goat. Because
there's too many action sequences and I fall asleep during them. Yep. But no, I didn't. And I think it's also because the way he filmed action was mostly, like, in close-ups of their faces. Which I'm sure a lot of people were not stoked about, but there wasn't a whole lot of choreography. Like when they did do choreography stuff, he did it really sparsely and it was very well done.
Yeah.
Like I remember the one Batmobile scene is really good.
That's oh, well, you did say, fall asleep.
No.
Yes.
No.
You missed Catwoman. Remember you missed her entire little like vengeance.
Oh shit. Vengeance. Yeah. I did a little bit.
Cause that was an entire choreographed scene.
It was really long. Guys. It was really long. And I did have a little bit of an issue with Catwoman. But I was going to say, like, well, okay, but then let's call you out in the movie theater. You also walked out to go get more popcorn.
I did.
At the best part of the movie. Like, the best part. Literally, you guys, like, the second Maddie left, he took his shirt off. And didn't just, like, for a second, like, left it off for a while. And you guys see, like, back and chest. And it was... so hot.
And I missed it.
And he missed it. And he was like spray painting on the ground. I was like, you're making art. And you're like, fuck. And you're listening to Nirvana again. And he like kept playing Something in the Way by Nirvana, which is like so sexy. oh my God.
This is made for you.
It really felt like it was at times. It just needed to switch out Michelle and Zoe. It would have been made for me. But... it did give me like the new generation's Batman Returns vibes, which I kind of think is okay. I'm all right to like pass on things that mean that much to me to somebody else and be like, this is for you.
Yeah. I mean, I really liked Colin Farrell.
Mm-hmm.
Unrecognizable.
Yes.
Except for those eyes. Those eyes are just so pretty.
It's like a puppy.
Yeah. Penguin puppy.
Not in this movie. I mean, this movie, he's pretty haggard, but
yeah.
Colin Farrell is a slice of man that is very, very sexy usually.
Yeah. And I mean, like, I feel like he did so well what Jared Leto was trying to do in House of Gucci, like with like completely transforming yourself into another character.
In fact, you could even say this was like the alt Jared Leto villain film because Paul Dano kind of did like a better Joker as the Riddler than Jared Leto did as the Joker. And and then Cobblepot seemed kind of like a better version of the Gucci character. It's like, oh, you could have given that role to Colin Farrell and he would have probably gotten an Oscar nomination. And poor Jared Leto. I apologize, Pumpkin. You still have your vampire movie coming up and we'll see how that is.
I do not apologize, Jared Leto. I'm saying it.
Jared, he's just jealous that we sang karaoke together once and then he wasn't there. Don't even listen to Maddie. You have my support, boo.
Aww.
Send me rats.
Oh, yeah.
So we saw the Batman. We liked it. We recommend it. Go see it.
Yeah.
Yeah. We're going to go see a movie tonight. What are we going to go see?
X.
Yeah, that's it. Just X. Every time we tell people what we're seeing, they like wait for more.
They're like, what?
What else is it? But you guys are horror people. You're our people.
So you know.
You know.
You know.
X.
Brittany Snow. Jenny Ortega.
Yes.
Filming a porno. Bam, chicka, bam, bam. In the barn.
In the 70s with old people that don't like it.
I'm going to jump so much.
It also has Mia Goth in it. Mia Goth. Yeah.
You're a goth.
I think Mia Goth is like the actress that I would have wanted to be.
Okay.
Like, she's in a bajillion movies. She's always kind of a weirdo. She always has, mm-hmm. like, shaved eyebrows. She was Shia LaBeouf's girlfriend for a long time.
And so, good for her. That
she's living my best
that
heterosexual female life.
To put up with that crazy pants.
Yeah, she was the one that was like, he's a crazy pants. Yeah. she's like, what do I like her the best? Oh my gosh, she's also in the, like, Coming in Space movie with that is like, she's one of the other like test subject people.
Does she get cummed on?
No, Juliette Binoche like takes a bunch of people to space.
Okay.
And she has really long hair and she has like a masturbation machine. I'm going to make this movie sound so good. You're all going to go out and watch this. And I don't 100% think that I liked it, but what I think is important is certain movies aren't necessarily like things you're enjoying while you're watching it, but it'll burn into your head.
Right.
And this comes up later. This is a good segue. So like this will burn it. It burns into your head. And then you're like, well, I guess, I mean, that's part of me now. It's just part of who I am now is this weird movie. I think it's called High Life. But they're basically like, it's like an apocalyptic-y type of movie. It's done very poetically. As a female director, who's like this kind of iconic female director, whose name I can't remember. But it's, because I didn't know I was going to talk about this movie. It just came out. But like, there's all these people, I think they're prisoners. Almost like 12 monkeys or something. And okay. They're being tested. And they're like trying to like save the human race. By maybe, I don't really remember. Like something.
And they need their seed.
Yeah. And basically then it comes out that like the reason all the people that are like the prisoners are like young and hot. Because they're like the ones that are going to repropagate the world.
Oh, and their next endeavor on Mars.
And it opens with like a fuck ton of dead bodies being like lifted out and pushed into space. So you're just watching like the ship, like letting go of like all these dead people.
Oh.
And it's very like non-linear. Doesn't make a lot of sense. You don't really understand what's happening.
Is
it's
there
really
gravity
pretty.
Or are they floating?
Both.
Oh, are they floating while they're masturbating?
Sort of. Her hair is like going all crazy. And she's like, and it's
does
like
it
a
like
New York
float
video.
Float away? I just want to know.
It's lots of like robotic-y things and fluids and weird stuff.
I just want to know.
And then, yeah, she'll go into your room like at night
like,
and just
like float
no, because she has to hold on to it. Okay, so yeah, maybe we're going to recommend watch High Life. It's a weird movie, but we're going to go see this movie X. We'll talk about it next week and let you guys know what we think.
Yeah.
All right. So last episode, we were talking all about Stephen King and his adaptations.
We left you bereft.
And we left you hanging. If you didn't listen to that episode, we basically talk about our top five, but it kind of ends up being a conversation about 10 movies. So like we talked about a bunch of Stephen King movies. We gave you some background on who Stephen King is as a person and what some of our favorite adaptations were. We were sort of counting it down and we were leaving it off at number 2.
Yes.
So I think we should start there and just jive in, right?
Jive turkey. Let's do it.
So number 2 also is a film that I would classify as something that maybe I don't enjoy watching it, which I kind of did watching it with Maddie recently. I very much enjoyed it. But by myself, very rarely am I by myself and I'm like, I want to watch this movie right now.
What movie are we talking about?
Because it burns into your head. Like it becomes part of who you are as a human being. I am talking about Pet Sematary. Pet Sematary is like, for some reason, as fucked as this movie is, it's a lot of people's gateway horror movie. At least in my generation, a lot of young people watch Pet Sematary pretty early on.
It's such a funny thing. Like, why? Why is that part of like the zeitgeist that like,
it's a weird thing though, right?
Like, you notice this is appropriate for children.
I think maybe because
there's children
cat.
In it.
Maybe they think it's a cat and they're like, oh, they can handle like a killer cat. Maybe they're dog people and they want to keep their kids from wanting to get a pet cat.
I mean, if there's anything this movie does, be like, I'm okay with that. I'm okay with
that. Yeah, I didn't like all gray cats for a really long time when I was a kid because I think they scared me.
That's very valid.
And I still don't like little kids. If you haven't seen Pet Sematary, just rest assured that there will be spoilers in this. So if you want to watch a movie from 1989 without it being ruined, then skip ahead to the next movie.
And then we'll ruin that one for you.
Yeah. This episode will have spoilers for Pet Sematary and Carrie. Just let that be said for the rest of the episode.
Everybody dies.
So Pet Sematary, like, new family moves to a new town. I mean, family moves to a new town.
I know. They're so excited.
It's on the most busy road in the middle of nowhere you've ever seen.
It's a busy road. It's no big deal. You know, it's just
semi. It is a big deal, though. This movie doesn't even hide
80 miles an hour.
It doesn't ever hide that any of the bad things that are going to happen are going to happen. And it's like very like, oh, this is a problem for everyone that's ever lived here.
I don't even know if you can even call that foreshadowing. It's like, this is going to come back and this is important.
It's like when your mom tells you you need to watch a show, but like tells you the whole plot of the show before you watch it. And you're like, you got to watch this.
It's like this.
By the second episode, she loses the baby. You know, like it's that kind of an intro. And then you're like, great, I'm going into this knowing exactly what's going to happen.
Right.
So this family moves in. The dad's really tradey. His name is, or I don't remember, Dale Midkiff.
Oh.
Yeah, Dale Midkiff. I want to see Dale Midkiff's midriff.
Yeah.
And I every time I rewatch it, I kind of am like, ooh, I'm into this dad in Pet Sematary. I always forget him when we do these lists of like, who are the hottest guys in horror? But I think he's definitely one of my choices.
He's dreamy.
He's a dreamy dude. He's married to Denise Crosby, who was, I don't want to say she saved my relationship, but Denise Crosby is important because she was the only thing that I shared in common with my stepfather growing up. He was a despicable human being, but he really liked Star Trek The Next Generation. And
okay.
I'm not a big Star Trek head, but I would watch it because, you know, when you're a kid and your parent watches the show, you just watch the show anyway because it's on TV. It's not like there's a choice. Like, you know, like, we didn't have multiple TVs. We had to watch it. So we would watch Star Trek The Next Generation. And Denise Crosby is like the blonde. She looks like she looks like Chyna Phillips from Wilson Phillips with the blonde short hair and the dark under, like the dark bowl, which I kind of have right now. My hair is very Denise, like a gay boy version of Denise Crosby.
No, it is not.
Yeah, no, it's dark on the side. And blonde on the top.
It looks very cute. I do like your haircut. Thanks, Pablo.
Thanks. I was thinking
Edwin.
I was like, who's Pablo? I was thinking I looked like the mom in Pet Sematary now with my new hair. But she's hot. And then it has Fred Gwynne, who is like Daddy Munster.
Fred Munster.
He's the highlight, I would say, go into this for the cat and the little boy and Fred Gwynne. It's from 1989. It's directed by Mary Lambert. Mary Lambert is also the director. It's awesome that it's a female director.
In 1989, yeah.
Yeah. And she would move on to being the director of American Psycho later on.
See? She got a taste for
good deals. Yeah. She. So I would call it, in two words, unpleasant and haunting.
Yes.
Maddie hadn't seen it really before.
I hadn't. I mean, like, it's such a kind of piece of pop culture, I guess. I mean, like, it's, so I knew what it was and what it was about. And then that just kind of got me far enough. But this shit made me jump.
Too far enough. Yeah, and Maddie jumped about four times. Then, like, the jumping meter for Maddie was about four.
Oh, God.
Which is good. I'm trying to remember things that scared me when I saw it as a kid, because I know that it was like a thing that we watched when we were really young.
The little boy is just so,
The big fear thing. I mean, the boy, yeah, is like terrifying. The ankle slash, like the Achilles slash.
It's just so brutal because that goes so deep. And you just see all of it. It's not one of those like nuanced little things, you know, that they like with Texas Chainsaw, where like you never see anybody go onto the hook.
No, you see it.
You see this Achilles gets
But I think that that's...
Oh, I just gave me the shivers.
I think it's meant to just imagine.
Nah, I know.
A really sharp medical razor sliding through the back of your foot.
I'm rubbing my Achilles.
And then run away. No.
What was the little boy's name?
Gage.
Gage. Mm-hmm. It was also in...
Nightmare on Elm Street.
Yeah, The New Nightmare. Yeah.
And he makes the same face. But back with the kid, like, they didn't tell him that he was in a scary movie at all. So he had no idea until he was older that he did a scary movie.
That he scarred people.
Yeah, he had no idea. He thought he was just playing. I kind of like the idea of like the kid in The Shining and the kid in Pet Sematary not knowing they were in horror films
at all. That's so funny.
And they're just kept away because you only film like their lines and like the stuff they have to do. And they would just imitate somebody and then that's it.
You just get a dress up with some makeup. You look dead.
His little phone call is really cute, too.
it's adorable.
It's apparently stuck in me more than I realized.
This is ridiculous, you guys. You don't understand.
So we were watching.
Hold on. Let's preface this correctly. Since Chris and I have been dating, one of the reasons why I love my partner is... Is the way he talks. Yeah. Is the way he talks. And Chris has a fun way to, how he pronounces some words are really just really cute and really fun.
I don't know what you're talking about.
A boot. But one thing that I always be like, oh, I love you. And
I love always, you.
Yeah. Chris would always say that. And I'm like, oh, that's just sweet. You say that's so weird. Fast forward.
I mean, preface that, put a pin in that Maddie's never said that I said, I love you. Weird. Like, that's never been like, he's never pointed it out to me. Like, and I think I know I do it.
Yeah.
But I don't know. There's certain things I say that I don't really know why.
Like little?
What about little?
Little. You see, you just did it.
Little.
Little.
How do you say little?
Little.
Little. Little. Little. Like that?
Little. Little.
Little.
Little.
Little. Little. You say little like because it is little. It's a little thing. There's two T's in it. Little.
It's just a beautiful inflection. Little. It's a beautiful inflection, and I love that. And I love it. It's little tiny things that you do. That's great. And
quirks.
Yeah, it's a cute little quirk, and you know, I always thought that it was just came from Chris being Chris, you know, and flash forward to us watching this movie. Mm-hmm. And this little demon spawn calling his father, admitting that he just murdered two people.
First, I played with Jet. And then I played with Mommy. And now I want to play with you.
That right there. That is how he's called, said you to me. For our entire relationship is based off how this little kid spoke.
The second the little kid said it, I even acknowledged it. Like, I could feel it. I was like, oh no. And then I just looked over the pillow. Like, he just kind of looked over to the side like, I am sorry. I didn't know. I had no idea that I was basically quoting Pet Sematary whenever I said that.
Yeah. I was
it's fun to say. And I think I've been saying that since I was like 8 years old. Like, I think I've been saying since I saw the movie. I thought it was funny. I wonder if someone says little weird and that's where I picked that up from too.
Like, probably
all my cute quirks that you love are from movies.
Euphemisms? Is that a euphemism?
So sad. No,
there's
euphemism.
Chrisisms.
Yeah, the Chrisisms. I've had other friends kind of point out that I say certain things weird, and little is one of them, but I've always been like, I don't really get it. I used to get teased for the way I said milk.
Hey, you said what?
Milk.
Milk?
Yeah. But I've been practicing milk, right?
Milk. How about Hulu?
Yeah, I can say Hulu.
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 Hulu. Hulu.
Milk. Little.
Milk.
But I do say cuttle instead of cuddle. Cuttle, and I know that I say that. And I know that's wrong. But I do it on purpose because I like cuttlefish. But I think I say cuttlefish. Cuttle. Weird, maybe.
You say, you just definitely express, if something has two T's in it, you say both T's.
Okay.
But you don't call me Matthew. That's good.
Yeah.
That would be odd.
The H messes that up.
Yes, it does.
Because that doesn't make a sound. That makes a... Oh, God. What else about Pet Sematary?
What I really... I think that it was so funny.
Back to you.
When Doc was taking him to the Pet Sematary... I had a frog in my throat.
Was it a frog from the Pet Sematary?
No, it was not.
Because it's probably dead.
Reanimated.
No, when he was like, it's just right down there, past that wooded area. And then they proceed to go on a hike. Like 4 miles.
Oh my God. Like over that,
rocks and cliffs and streams.
That
and
crazy up a wood mountain pile and, thing. Yeah. That's like bones and wood or whatever the fuck they're climbing over. There are so many times, like when I go, especially when I lived in LA, where people would be like, we're going hiking, you know? And I'm like, oh, I don't really think that sounds like something I want to do. But I would be like, we're going hiking. And usually it was like, going like Runyon Canyon, which is literally like a dirt road.
Right. And you're walking up a hill.
You're just walking upwards, you know, and then you walk forever. But it's not hiking. Like, I'd be like, you guys are so over glamorizing what hiking is. But maybe I'm thinking like rock climbing or something. Because
like hiking.
You have a stick and it's hard terrain.
Yeah, that's hiking. I grew up in Colorado, so I know how to hike.
Yeah, right? Okay, in LA, they don't.
I also know I don't like it, so...
Yeah, no, I don't think I would like it either. But that looked crazy, and I was like, you're an old man. Like, how are you even doing this?
He's like, just watch your step there.
And he just offered it over for no reason. Like, let's go on a trip.
I know, I was like, okay. So, yeah, the entire thing is just like, this guy just brings utter chaos to this poor, innocent family, grieving family, and he's like,
and he comes off as, like, the most loving person in the movie.
He's like, well, I'm just going to fuck up your life.
Yeah, but everything that happens is essentially his fault.
It all is.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, the cat and the boy would die anyway, but they should have died and just been like buried like a normal dead person. Those two deaths aren't his fault, but and the horror that happens because those things happen, instead of healing, horror.
Or if they just
all because of him.
I don't know, a fence. Like, if they just had a fence in their yard. I mean, like, I grew up on a dirt road, but, like, the end of the road was an extremely busy street that, like, we weren't allowed to go across for, like, a really long time. There was, like, an underpass that you could get to if you did have to cross it and everything, like, but it was, like, super, super dangerous because the cars were going so fast. And, I mean, like, you
put a barrier.
You put a barrier.
Especially
you put
if you have like a toddler.
A toddler. I don't know. Maybe just a little chicken wire and some posts. And
but they had just moved in. Maybe they intended to.
Well, I don't know. Maybe a real estate agent would be like, this is a busy street. We're going to, I don't know, fence you in a little bit.
Yeah, he's a doctor. He could have afforded.
Fucking doctors.
So crazy. That's so true, though. I never actually thought about that. Really, if you take most of Stephen King's books, there's like something like a fence that could have solved a lot of these problems in general. But then you wouldn't have anything to watch.
It's true.
And I mean, and as much as the story itself is centrally like spooky and creepy or whatever, there's this little subplot that's almost like a throwaway, like... Oh, by the way, this character is sort of distraught for a whole nother terrible reason.
Right.
And then they just throw that in. And that ends up being the thing that's most haunting to people.
The spirit guy?
Yeah. I was thinking like, you know, Zelda.
Oh, fuck. Zelda.
Zelda's really like the thing most people remember from this movie when you think about it. First take on Pet Sematary.
This family has
this poor crazy, ill, rotting sister that the main character
there was. I'm pretty sure that Stephen King, I mean, this is no, I have no proof of this whatsoever.
She's so scary.
But there was a real woman, like, in France in, like, the late 1800s where they, her daughter wanted to marry a doctor and, or someone that was, like, out of society that, like, the mother didn't agree with. So what did the mother do? She locked her in a room and starved her until the lady was, like, 75 pounds and couldn't move and was in darkness the entire time and looked exactly like Zelda. And there's pictures from that. And I really feel like Stephen King just was like, I'll take that and I'm just going to put that in this story right here.
It could be. He often does like a, you think this is bad, well, look at this person's backstory
kind of subplot. Yeah, right.
He likes to do that a lot. And Zelda is definitely like the darkest of the secrets in the closet. Like,
that woman has some dramatic bullshit going on in her life.
Yeah. Yeah, really bad. And then she's sort of functional.
And she's just not dealing with any of it.
So maybe she didn't build a fence because she was a little preoccupied. Like, her mind
fighting
was,
her own demons. Yeah. Putting them in a fence in her mind.
She was thinking, maybe I'll get hit by a truck. And Zelda will stop calling me like the lambs at night. Such a terrifying creature. Fun fact too, Zelda's played by a boy, which I always think is like amazing.
Maury, that's a man.
Yeah. Maddie clocked that before like anything, before I could even tell him.
Yeah.
He's like, that's a man. Maddie's like ability to like see through prosthetics, and he always notices lace fronts. Maddie notices things about movies that I don't notice.
Oh, like when a cup isn't full.
Oh my God, he hates
that. Oh, it's the, oh, it is so infuriating. I'm like, there's no liquid in that cup.
Yeah, how I feel about people like going to space, that's how Maddie feels about cups not
empty cups. I mean, like, it doesn't have to be full of something because, you know, that's sound. And it's like, there's reasons for it because you can't have something sloshing around right by microphones. I get that. But like, all what? All of that could be solved by like literally a thin layer of hot glue in the bottom of your prop. And you just carry it.
Taking you to school, kids. You're taking notes.
I mean, because it just changes the entire way how you carry something.
Why would hot glue in a cup change the way that you
carry? The weight of it. Like the weight.
Hot glue doesn't weigh anything.
Sorry, if you hot glue like a quarter.
Oh, okay.
Like if you glued just like
you just like pouring glue in it. I'm like, I feel like that's kind of empty. And
like, yeah. I mean, it's epoxy something. I don't know. I just don't think it's that hard. And it changes. I mean, that is one thing that takes me out of the reality of a film or TV show so much and so rapidly.
What takes me out of it is Maddie pointing out that cup is empty. Like, this is ruined for me, so I'm going to throw it on over to you. Now.
Absolutely.
I would never even notice.
There's many times you've been like, what? And I'm like, yeah, no, that was empty. That was empty.
Yeah.
But.
Oh, well.
One other prop I really loved was the special effects of our spirit guide, who's also, I mean, we both have, both parents are being haunted by.
What spirit guide? What are you talking about? Oh, Pascal.
Yeah. Yeah.
I was thinking like Poltergeist 2, like the like Native American. No. Hotel, and I'm like,
no,
that's not in Pet. Is there an Indian in Pet Cemetery? No, like, it's an Indian
dead runner now. Guy who's like telling him everything that's going to happen, that it's salted ground.
Pascal. Yeah.
Pascal.
Yeah. He is very cool. I did like a homoerotic photo of Pascal and the dad canoodling in the pet cemetery for the photos.
I like that.
Yeah, very much. There, yeah. My special effects are not good in that photo at all, though. I used a brain that's like the size of a pancake. And then just duct taped it onto my friend's head and then poured blood on top of it. And we're like, good to go. Let's go.
Good to go. Let's do it.
It was like, and people were like, ooh, the special effects are amazing on this one. I'm like, thank
if
you.
If you only knew.
Duct tape.
Duct
dog
tape.
Toy. Yeah. Like, not fancy.
I think that was like super, I mean, like, because I remember seeing Cage and I remember seeing Pascal's face. Like, I remember that from growing up, but I'd never seen the movie because it was just too scary. Yeah.
And then Church the Cat, like, has some good jump scary stuff. I had this thought too, like when we were watching, like, I know there is a sequel and it's not very good, and I only watched it once and begrudgingly, and because I auditioned for it like 6 times, and I really just like hate Pet Sematary too, mostly probably because I'm not in it, but Pet Sematary is more about, you know, grief and mostly the loss of their child,
trauma,
you know, and the loss of their family in general, the dissolution of their family. But if you were to really like take it about the Pet Sematary itself, or just beyond the Pet Sematary, that could be a fun bunch of movies.
Oh yeah,
there's like a bunch of and I don't think they would be the same tone as this, obviously, but if you did do like killer cats, killer dogs, killer turtle, whatever.
A zombie turtle. Oh my God.
Like, that would be a movie I'd want to watch. I'd want to watch Pet Sematary 3, The Pettening or whatever. Like, petting zoo is open. It's just like crazy lambs.
Oh, no.
Just all these animals coming back to life would be amazing to watch. And they didn't really, that's never really been done. So.
Attack of the Zombie Animals.
That's a free idea for all of you guys looking for scripts. Did we do our honorable mentions in the last episode or no? Okay. To recap, our honorable mentions were The Mist. Yeah. Needful Things. Yeah. Dark Half. Yeah. The Stand. Half yeah, half nah.
I mean, and both of them.
Yeah, both of them, good things, bad things. Usually not even the same good things and same bad things in both movies. So yeah, if you watch them both, did a super cut, you could probably make a really good movie.
Maybe.
Or maybe it's unfilmable.
It's iconic in the fact of what it's a really fun. The original miniseries is a really fun slice of time. From like slice, like picture from that time period, just like Vegas, bam. Like, I thought that was cool. And the new one,
has Whoopi,
and the worst performance of Skarsgård I've ever seen.
Well, yeah, but it has
a crazy chick. I like,
and the trash can man, I liked a lot.
Yeah, the trash can man was so good, and his face just slowly melting from the radiation. Yeah, it was lovely.
So good and bad, both stands. The original Stand has Joe Bob in it, and the like one of the opening
Joe,
scenes,
Bob,
which is fun.
Joe Bob,
and then Gerald's Game, we really like and recommend.
Yeah, that was very much on the list, and then we booted it because we need to talk about something else.
Yeah, and that leaves only one property left.
What's it gonna be? Oh, mama.
They're all gonna laugh at you.
They're all gonna laugh at you.
They're all gonna laugh at you.
They're all gonna laugh at you. The original Warble. Well, not the original. Second best Warble.
You don't think it's the best?
I mean, come on.
She did it 2 years before. I think, Mama White warbled. So that Laurie Strode could run.
Could shriek.
We are talking about Carrie, ladies and gentlemen. Finally.
It is your time, Carrie White. We're talking about you.
They're going to take you to the prom. Carrie came out in 1976.
Yes.
Directed by Mr. Brian De Palma. I think this is probably Brian De Palma's. He's working on all of his cylinders and he's really coming into his own as a director. Like, this is the movie I would point out that uses all the De Palma tricks. And okay, before this, De Palma was seen as kind of like this. I was going to say masochist, but that's not the right word. He's sort of sadistic towards female characters in some of his movies. It's sort of a, what is the word when a guy is not good towards women, or their views towards women are bad?
A chauvinist? A womanizer?
No.
A asshole?
A little bit an asshole. So, like, well, whatever. So, Brian De Palma kind of had this reputation. Then he did this movie that's pretty much like the most feminine horror film in the old
female driven, yeah.
I'd say this is the Thelma and Louise of horror films. You know, like,
yeah.
There's very few male characters in general. Most of them are not likable. Except for, with the exception of Tommy Ross, everybody's a dick in this movie. Like the teachers, yeah. Like every, all men are kind of not good. And then the female characters also mostly evil, but it is a very feminine energy film. Like I would say, like it smells of feminine things. And I'm not talking about that. I'm talking about like perfumes and has like a clean linen like look to it, you know. God, I'm not one of those guys. I wouldn't say something gross like that about women. I love women. I think they're fantastic. They're better than boys.
It's so true.
It stars a crazy amount of amazing people. It's like the star-making performance of Sissy Spacek.
Yes.
Piper Laurie, who, in my opinion, is the most deserving of an Academy Award that was nominated that didn't get it.
Right.
Amy Irving, who ended up being Steven Spielberg's wife for a long time, and gave him child. She's also the smoky voice girl from like All Dogs Go to Heaven. So if you recognize her, I don't know where.
That makes sense.
It's probably from there. Nancy Allen, who is like my favorite actress that's in a lot of major things that nobody seems to ever know her name, which I think is kind of crazy. Like she's one of these people that's like, she accomplished so much in such a short period of time, but people don't really seem to know her. She's like the villain Chris in this.
Right. Yeah. But then
she also is like in Body Double and, she's in a bunch of De Palma films. Then she shows up in RoboCop as like the female lead, but she's like kind of this like butch testosterone-y part. And she's like still works now.
Yeah.
With like really, really hot gray hair. She has like the best like natural silvery looking hair I've ever seen. So yeah. Nancy Allen, I think, is really underrated. John Travolta, this is his first film role ever. First
feature, yeah.
William Catt.
He auditioned for it when he was like on break from Welcome Back, Kotter.
Yeah.
Like still in costume, was like, I'm gonna go audition for this movie.
Hey, I'm Vinnie Barbarino. and Betty Buckley, who's mostly a stage actress that everyone knows. PJ Souls' first film before she went on to being in Halloween and Rock and Roll High School and all these fun things. And Edie McClurg's first movie, who is like Mrs. Poole in the Hogan Family and like the villain in Elvira and the receptionist in Ferris Bueller's Day Off and the mom and Natural Born Killers. Space. Is she in Office Space?
Yeah.
I don't remember her in Office Space.
Oh, is she? Da-da-da-da. Just a moment. I'm pretty sure that's her.
She plays a secretary in like 450 movies, so that it's very possible that she's in it. Like she probably has, I would say, like 300 and something credits on IMDb. Like works a lot. She's been around forever. She has such a specific voice.
Movie, right?
It's her very first movie. It's kind of amazing. A lot of Edie McClurg's stuff is like mostly known for like 80s comedies. Like she's like the girl at the car rental place, like in Planes, Trains, and Automobiles. Steve Martin just goes on his like
this crazy tangent,
profanity tyrant. She's like, I want to get
in the car right fucking now.
That scene used to be the scene my uncle would show me when he's like, do you want to see the dirtiest scene? And I'm like, yes. And then it would be that scene with Steve Martin just saying fuck 470 times. And I was like, ooh, that's nuts.
We can't say that word.
And she was like my favorite character in Ferris Bueller. She's like, they think he's a righteous dude.
A righteous dude.
She's awesome. That was her first movie too. Carrie is a hard movie for me to talk about because it is so personal to me. Like it feels like it's really hard for me to be subjective about the original Carrie because it is like perfect. Soaked into being in me. Like I have a tattoo for it.
Yeah.
Like, I love this
Flashdance Carrie. It's one of the most amazing tattoos I've ever seen.
Thank you. And it's on my ribs. And I have it because if everyone's going to laugh at you, it's okay if you're a maniac.
Yeah.
You don't care about the laughter because you're a maniac. Yeah. She's pulling the rope and putting blood on herself.
Right.
She's a badass. Really, Sissy Spacek's character not a badass in this movie, really at all. She's like the definition of like a helpless, defenseless creature. I'm trying to think because most movies will be like these are things that are good, these are things that are not good. I find it hard to think of things that are not good about Carrie. I know it has its detractors, but
I'm really annoyed that the one guy got knocked out / killed by just a bucket.
His death scene is a little That it, that's recreated in almost every single
in every
iteration.
Yeah. I didn't know that they were just so dangerous.
Yeah, Dame buckets falling from the sky are dangerous. You know,
I should be looking out for those more.
Sometimes when you kick the bucket kicks you.
Yeah.
I don't know if I want to just go through like be like, here's a bunch of trivia about Carrie, because I know every little stupid thing about this movie, but we could do some. Like, do you want to do a game of like telling them some fun stuff that we know?
Sure. Yeah.
Because a lot of times people don't know like the cute things. Like, okay, so my favorite thing about Carrie, like as far as like stuff that people don't know, I've like told you when we first met and like when we're first going to watch this, I was like, oh my God, did you know? Because nobody ever knows this. Like, George Lucas and Brian De Palma were part of like this clique of like all these directors that used to hang out, which is fucking surreal and weird to like, but there's all this footage of them and it's like them like in cabins drinking wine and they show each other their movies. And it seems like the coolest group of nerdy people that I would want to like hang out with so badly. Yeah. And I can't imagine any of them doing with each other now, which is like, you know, like I wish they still like my hope and dream is that that little clique, because it's like Scorsese, Coppola, Spielberg, Lucas, De Palma, like they would all just like hang out in a room, get a hotel, have parties, have girls over and like just talk movies and stuff. And I hope that they still do like as like 70-year-old men. But like, during one of these things,
back to it now.
They would always kind of compete with each other and like give each other props, give each other ideas. And one of the things that they decided to do this for this movie and for the other movie that they were working on is like, De Palma's like, I'm doing this movie, Carrie. I want a bunch of unknowns. And George Lucas is like, dope. I'm doing a movie called Star Wars. I'm looking for a bunch of unknowns too. So they have their auditions together.
This is so crazy.
And like would give sides that are like, some of them are Carrie parts, some are Star Wars lines. Can you imagine doing those two different auditions too? That's like so how different the dialogue is for them. Like Star Wars is almost indecipherable when you're reading that stuff. Carrie Fisher does like great jokes about it.
Tatooine?
Oh my God, no, but it's like, strike the regulator in the first combustion code. And like, it's like crazy. Carrie Fisher does like a whole bit. Uh-huh. Did a whole bit back in the day, like where she still remembers her audition line from this audition, where she's being Princess Leia, and it is like all technical jargon for like a paragraph, but she can still do it like verbatim.
That's amazing.
And she's like, I think I got cast because I was the only person that could get through this without laughing or without being like, because it doesn't make any sense when you're saying it at all. And the Carrie stuff is all just like, I think it would be really magical. Like, hey, shut up. Don't call me stupid.
I mean, Sissy got it from like putting Vaseline in her hair and just looking real gnarly. Mm-hmm. You know?
Yeah, she just showed up with no makeup and like a sailor dress and Vaseline in her hair.
And was the art director's wife, right?
Mm-hmm.
This is so cool, which is just like, hey, my wife would be good.
Or maybe she got in and was like, hey, my husband would be good.
Oh.
Sissy was a boss at this time. Like, it's kind of like, people think of it as like, this is Sissy Spacek's first movie, but it wasn't. She was very much a big part of like 70s cinema. So she'd already worked with Robert Altman. She'd already done Badlands and with Terrence Malick. She was already kind of famous. This was just, I think this was the first movie that got her an Oscar nomination, but she was already around. So what's cool is like, and then Sissy Spacek also is like hardcore method actress, which you don't really glean. I don't glean that from her in other movies.
Yeah.
She seems so like, not to say that if you do method, you're not normal. It's just like, there's a certain type of actor that you tend generally tend to see.
Do method.
Yeah. It's not crazy. The 70s anymore. And in the 70s, that was a much more young Hollywood was very much jumping onto that, which is funny because that's now our old Hollywood, you know, but like
so funny.
Hoffman and Sissy Spacek and all these people were like, I'm going to live and breathe and be this character all the time. Like, I know like when they did like the epic, you know, scene at the prom, she didn't take the dress off for 3 days.
Oh God.
Like she wore it when she was done and she'd like sleep in her trailer and like, she just kept it on.
Oh, that would have smelled so bad.
And she's covered in Karo Crochet. So like
sticky from
she just like, wanted to live in that moment and like stay in that moment. Like,
oh God. Oh, no, no.
To which, I mean, I love and respect when actors take things to that level. I really do. I respect the fuck out of it. But there's other actors that don't, and I kind of see their point more of being like, okay, but there's like, don't you just want to like let it go?
Right. When you want to be like,
and be able to
done get with
back
this.
Into the thing the next day. Like,
and like go able to have like a sandwich.
Yeah. Like, or she like didn't hang out with anybody on set.
Right. She was very, she isolated herself a lot and had a lot of just like crazy religious stuff in her area.
I think how fun that set out. Would be. So, and, like, yeah. I bet those kids had so much fun with each other. Oh, and like, and you don't get to experience any of that. And I think Sissy Spacek's a good enough actress that she could have gone in and out and been that character still. Like,
I didn't know that. So,
yeah, there's like, it reminded me of like when I heard about Girl Interrupted.
That's what I was just thinking. I was like,
you know, like, and I told you
just thinking about
that they went into two camps where it was kind of like, these are the girls that are going to stay in this fucking institution.
Which and was like, two of them.
Yeah. It was just Winona Ryder and Elizabeth Moss.
And they slept in the insane asylum.
Yeah. And like, didn't leave at all. Didn't. Like, it break their characters, like, just stayed there. And all the other girls were, like, in hotels and going out and getting drinks after work. And,
like, imagine just going, like, finishing shooting and then just gonna go out and have fucking drinks with Angelina Jolie and Brittany Murphy. And, like,
yeah.
Well, I wanna go do that.
Clea DuVall and stuff. I wanna go hang out in that group.
I don't wanna hang out with the crazy people.
And I love Winona Ryder more than anyone.
Yeah, I'd be like, bye, girl. No.
I'd be like, honey, Noni, we don't have to stay here.
We don't have to do
I this. Promise the other girl's gonna get the Oscar anyway. Let's just have fun.
Oh. Oh.
This is turning out to be Angelina Jolie's movie anyway. Let's just go make her buy us drinks. Yeah, like, it just, that sounds more fun. But maybe acting isn't supposed to be fun. Oh,
right.
It's serious.
It's work. It is serious work.
Speaking of serious stuff, I also find it very funny that Piper Laurie doesn't refer to this as a horror film. She sees it as a black comedy, and she still refuses to not call it a black comedy. Like, she's like, she sees it as like, this is hilarious. And I love that because it makes me feel a lot less bad that I find it hilarious.
Right. Like, there's very much aspects of this movie that are camp.
And all of those are Margaret White. Like, every single thing that she does makes me happy. And this movie's been in my life for so long that I know it better than almost any horror film. Besides maybe Poltergeist or Jaws, like, I know it so well.
Yeah.
But it makes me delighted with, like, every little thing she does. Just, I can feel endorphins and happy stuff flying through my body when she talks. And it's down to, like, the weird cadences that she uses and, like, the way she's full body.
Oh, yeah, she just kept
she becomes possessed. I'm convinced she's possessed
by the spirit of the law.
And I don't think there's several things with like directors talking about working with actors and then like surprised when an actor brings the character to the table and they're like, oh, we weren't expecting. Like, oh, so that's how they're going to do this.
Okay.
And I think that's funny because you just like kind of put yourself in the shoes of like, what do you think Brian De Palma thought when he was like, and action? And then she just that voice. And then,
I feel like whiskey.
I feel like you'd have to just let it ride. You're just like, all right, go. Yeah. Like, let's just go. Yeah. So this is where we're going with this character. Let's just do it.
Like, and apparently she can keep his like a straight face.
Oh, yeah. Like, yeah. I was reading that she just laughed.
Like, she could barely
she would break character
herself.
Because it was so funny because she thought she was doing a comedy. That confirms, too, that like a lot of times when I'm watching movies, I feel like the actors don't get the memo of what the vibe of the movie is.
Right. Like Renee Zellweger in
Texas Chainsaw.
The Next Generation.
Yeah. Nobody told Renee Zellweger in the Next Generation Chainsaw movie that was a
funny movie.
It was made in a campy way. So her fear is so opposite what everybody else is doing that it sticks out and you're like, oh God, this is like, it's disturbing.
Right. But I think that's what also makes it so good.
It's not so good though. That's the problem. I think you need a refresher because it's a really bad movie. It's just like, it's good because we like Renee Zellweger.
And Matthew McConaughey.
And we like Matthew McConaughey, especially young.
Crazy.
Wacky Matthew McConaughey. But it's not good. It's not, like, not in no good. Universe would I tell someone, please watch this. It's wonderful. I just think gay people like it because the box art is super gay and funny.
Right.
And just like gay people have gravitated towards Carrie forever. Like, and I think that's part of the thing is that this movie represents a lot for queer culture and the queer experience. Mm-hmm. I wouldn't say that Carrie's a queer icon, but I think I would. We identify, I'll speak for myself. I identify with the fact that like I was a weirdo kid. I was nowhere near what Carrie was, but I was made fun of. I was teased. And a lot of us, that's our story, you know?
And this is one of those original kind of good for her movies. Yeah. You're like, good for her.
What she does is
burn the school down.
Fucking terrible. Do it. It's terrible.
It's murder
of everyone. It's absolutely
and
terrible.
You somehow still love this character so much and still feel so bad for her. You're like, good for her.
Yeah. I mean, you could say like they all deserved it because they were all laughing at her, but they weren't all laughing at her. That was like in her head.
I mean, yeah, there's definitely a level of how Sissy Spacek does this character was very much. I mean, like, there's something else going on with her. Like, she's so not well adjusted.
Yeah, like there's more. Yeah. Sissy needed to go to Carrie White needed to go Carrie to the White, doctor. Yeah,
doctor.
And get diagnosed for some other issues.
But also in that time frame and in a super religious house, like any sort of psychiatry, therapy, that's all super looked down on.
Yeah.
That's super like, you know, if you that's like.
I mean, her mom is like so religious that she's made up her own Bible, apparently.
Yeah, because there's so many things like all that stuff's like not in the Bible. So the original sin was
intercourse.
and a new sin. And like that's not in the Bible. Like there are so many different camps of Christianity, and some of them say that the original sin was sex, you know, and that is a firm belief held by some people. And other
but
people are
not
like,
in the Bible.
But not in the Bible.
That seems like it's an opinion then, you know.
Yeah, you know, and it's like it comes from people interpreting like the forbidden fruit and what does that mean and what people interpret the forbidden fruit to be.
I find it nice that they believe in metaphors.
Or something.
That makes something a little bit more open-minded than I was originally planning. Like, what is this real forbidden fruit? Like, you would think it would be like, no, they mean fruit.
No, yeah. It's like, there's a snake and there's an apple.
That's not
and they're not allowed to have that fucking apple.
Yeah. Well.
But it's a trouser snake.
Carrie has her apple. Red. I should have known it would be red. Pink mama. It's
pink. Shout out to Jordan Ladd. Thank you again.
Yeah. Also, yeah. If you guys are new, do you guys know that the Carrie voice in the beginning of our episode is Jordan Ladd, the actress from Cabin Fever and Grindhouse? And
she's major.
That's our friend. So, yeah, she plays Carrie in all of our intros. That was a really fun day when we were recording that. Like,
yeah, you got to like coach.
I got to direct Jordan a little bit and like have her just be sending me different takes of that dialogue. And she's such a good actress. She takes direction really well. And like, and yeah,
you got it. Bing, bang, bop.
Bing, bang, bop. Jordan Ladd gave us what we needed. She's killer. We're going to get her on the podcast this season. And we've got some secrets and goodies about that. But yeah, Jordan is a fantastic, fantastic actress. My favorite horror films are Grace for you guys to check out. Grace, she basically carries that all by herself. And then I would say like her role in Nowhere.
Yeah.
Is a delight. And it also has some of the most disturbing imagery in the movie. Involves stuff with her, but she is so fun as the like nymphet spiritual twin sister of Ryan Phillippe. Like it's just like such a fun role for her. And she gets to like chew the scenery. Greg Araki clearly loves her so much. And it's
right.
Like, it's just like gives her like such a fun character to play. No Dodo Bird. It's Armageddon Day. She's Armageddon Day. Dodo Bird. No wonder I'm feeling randy all of a sudden. she cracks me up. Are you gonna finish it? Are you gonna throw up? Promise my mom I'd quit for a week. I'm just gonna do a bunch of speed later and not eat for 3 days. So yeah, Jordan Ladd's our Carrie. There's been many other Carries throughout time.
Oh man, some of them we're just not even gonna give the light of day to.
No, some of them are gonna stay in the dark.
We're gonna stay far, far away.
What is some other shit that we want to say about the original Carrie, though? Because god damn it, she's waited this long to be talked about.
Well,
I'll throw out some other little Chrissyisms then for you guys. Did you know that big jump scare at the end with the hand?
Oh my god!
Was added for the movie. It wasn't in the book. That's like not any. That has nothing to do with the book at all.
And that we recently just showed showed a friend this movie for the first time, and it was really kind of great. I get why Chris likes doing it with me. Showing someone, you know, like one of a movie where you know when shit's going to happen and like.
And they don't.
And they react exactly how you want them to.
And it's delicious. It's so fun to show people scary things and then just watch the friend and not the movie, you know? Like you just mortified. Wait for all the things. And yeah, he jumped out of his hand of his knickers when her hand comes up. Fun fact, that's actually her hand.
Right. She was very insistent.
She's basically sounds like a boss. Like every time you like kind of hear about her a little bit, she's right. Like, she looks little and like, she's like, no, I'm doing all these things. She like, I read another thing about a different movie where like she had auditioned and it was for Coal Miner's Daughter. And she like really, really wanted to be in this movie and was auditioning. And then she heard from a friend or something, or from one of the people involved in the movie that they were going to go ahead with this other actress. And she was drinking at the time, like a glass of wine, and she broke the wine glass with her hand. Out of anger, and they changed their mind and gave it to her. And I was kind of like,
I thought you were gonna say she broke a glass of wine with her mind.
No, right. She's like, telekinesis. This was not fucking bullshit. Like, yeah. So like she wanted to be the hand and made sure that it was her. But to do that, she had to be like under plywood and then like with all these rocks and things above her. Oh, excuse me.
We're all exploding.
Coffee machines making noises. And then she had to bust her hand out of these rocks. But it was this whole jam of like her just being in a box all day.
Oh my god, that's.
And she's like, "Is it time?" You know, like, "Not yet,
not yet."
Now, do it now, and then you're just like, and imagine just like busting your hand like through with your seventies nails and stuff, like just like busting your hand through a bunch of rocks to grab somebody and not be able to see. I wouldn't do it. I would give it to somebody else.
A hand model.
Yeah.
Yeah.
If I don't have to do it, no, fuck that. I don't think so. Like,
I mean,
busted rocks for you. She also is the reason all the girls got naked, which I like a lot. The movie is like kind of infamous for like beginning right at PE and then like going into the shower scene.
I mean, the opening scene is so much nudity.
Which is the thing that keeps most younger viewers from watching Carrie early on.
That was
is funny to me.
That's literally what happened to me.
So Pet Sematary, okay for kids to watch at a really young age. Because Carrie, technically there's no nudity, there's no cussing.
Right.
Just horror that will stay with you for the rest of your life. Like or a fear of being under the bed. Like, what's under the bed?
Yep.
What's the cat going to do to me?
Yep.
What if we die?
Neighbors, old men, children.
Zelda. But Carrie, very, very, very much, I think, an uplifting movie for young people for the most part. It's a positive, like, it's not a positive message, but it is.
It'll scare the shit out of you and don't make you not want to bully someone.
I think it's a good thing to show kids that are maybe being bullies. I think it's a good thing to show people that are kind of weird. Like, what
that
happened
to
you?
Very. Oh my god, that is a very specific.
If I had a child and I had like a message from like a principal saying like, "Hi, Chris Fox, I just wanted to let you know that like your child, Xavier Fox, has been problematic at school and he's been picking on people," I'd be like, "Cool, all right, send him home." And I would have a stern word with him and then I'd sit him down and I'd make him watch Carrie and be like, "Look what happens to kids that are bullies."
Oh my God.
Set on fire.
Set on fire. This is what happens.
Do not mess. You don't know which one of those kids has telekinesis.
You don't know which one has miracles. Miracles, I tell you.
And they could come after you. What I really think is that it's like, it's good for people that are like the weirdos. And I think that it's an affirming movie.
Mm-hmm.
And I think it just says a lot. I think it has a better, it's a more of a piece of art, and I feel like kids should be allowed to watch art, you know?
I know that, like,
but it's, nudity, it's so weird, our weird relationship with nudity, because there's naked, a lot of naked bodies in the beginning of the movie. It's like a hard no.
Mm-hmm.
Did your parents make you used to have to like cover your eyes when there was like boobs on TV?
Yeah.
We used to have to do stuff like that too. And I kind of was like, if only we could have been like, I'm gay. Don't worry. National Geographic. I mean, besides the iconic ending and the iconic beginning, I would just like to give like props to like the creativity that Brian De Palma uses in this movie.
Everything in there.
Like the soft focus on a lot of things. He uses a lot of split screen stuff. There's ways that he uses Springsteen's films. Yeah, no. split screens. The way he uses them, I've never seen in certain movies. Like, I've never seen that again.
Yeah.
Like, he'll do like, you're looking at this side on the right, you look at the side on the left, then the side on the left starts to just slide over to the right and exposing something else underneath it. Like, just every kind of visual cue and visual trick that you could use it's really unsung how well directed that movie is. And like, it just visually is like eye candy.
The one that literally affects you physically is when Carrie and Tommy are dancing. Mm-hmm. At the prom, and I literally said when we just watched with our friend, I was like, oh my God, I feel dizzy. I feel like nauseous, because how they filmed it was that the camera was on being tracked around, but then
on a dolly,
on a dolly, and then there was a rotating platform the other way, counterclockwise. So it's purposely making your
sort of like you're a fancy cake at a deli.
Yeah.
You know, and then there's being a little the toy train direction. Going around you the opposite direction. Because we were watching and I was like, I wonder how they did this. I can't figure out the math of how this actually works. You know, like, I figured the dolly part, but the spinning platform going the other way is the other way, because I'm like, they can't be moving their legs like fast.
Right. And then they're also dancing as the thing is spinning. Yeah. So it's like three different like spinning situations.
So cool and so smart, you know? Yeah. And then there's like an authenticity to a lot of it. And I think part of that is being a nature of being a 1976 horror film. Like, horror was this kind of cool thing at that moment that it was going from being dead, basically, like being like a parody of itself. Like in the 50s and the early 60s, it was like other countries were kind of making groundbreaking horror films, especially the Italians and stuff. But there was not a lot of people making horror films, and there was no video yet. There was no way for people to even see these besides like drive-ins or something. Mm-hmm. So serious horror films started to like sneak through.
Like Rosemary's Baby?
Yeah, like Rosemary's Baby kind of started in the 60s, and then Night of the Living Dead. And then like in the 70s, you had all these like kind of like Don't Look Back and The Changeling. And like, and this came about like after Texas Chainsaw Massacre and Exorcist, and Exorcist being nominated for like a bajillion Oscars.
Good for you, Pazuzu.
And then Carrie, you know, was like the next, like, oh, and then this is up for Best Actress and Best Supporting Actress, which like shocked the shit out of both of them when they got nominated.
Like,
you weren't allowed to get nominated for horror films, basically. Like, that was just not even
still
in
not.
Here.
Sorry, right? Tony Collette. We're still mad.
But yeah, like it's so unheard of.
Right.
So I think, and it was part of this like sea of things. And it was also a sea of like horror movies being respectable, artistic, and being fun.
Mm-hmm.
So young people were going to them. Like before, horror movies were the thing you watched like on TV from the old timey days.
Right.
It's like a dead genre. It would be almost like if somehow Westerns became super cool now. Because it's like a genre that we don't see anymore.
Uh-huh. Oh, that's a really good way to put it. I've never thought of it that way.
And then suddenly, like, young people were making these really edgy, cool Western movies. And then those movies were getting nominated for Oscars. That's kind of what horror movies were like in this time in the 70s. Of course, that didn't last long. And then in the 80s.
And they went right down the crap again.
80s was like by far the most entertaining time for horror films, by far. But the least respected. The only times you could get Oscar nominated in the 80s was for makeup. And they like made up the makeup category because of American Werewolf in London to be like, here's an Oscar, because that is obviously difficult to do.
And that's the only thing.
And what's funny now is you can't get nominated for a makeup Oscar by doing a horror film. It's almost impossible. They never even make the shortlist. It's only like prosthetics for your face to make you old or make you chubby or whatever. They don't even take into consideration that maybe like cutting someone's head off in a movie requires some sort of makeup.
Oh my God. I saw the weirdest thing. I don't know why that reminded me of this, but I saw it was Sigourney Weaver's dummy for like Alien, for like stuff, but it was like she had no bones. So, like, it was just like her head. It was like her entire body, but it was like malleable and you could like squish it, and they were trying to get it to the right place, but they were like, it like literally it was like Sigourney Weaver's face had no bones and they could like move it around, and it was very funny.
Poor Sigourney.
Hey,
say your impression.
My impression.
Do you have any bones?
What bones?
No, do you have any bones?
I don't have a skull. Or bones.
There you go. Like, no, do your bones joke. Yeah. Jesus. All right, guys, let's go into some other Carries. Like, we've told you the best Carry. If there was an award for the next best Carry, which there isn't, and there shouldn't be.
It's going to be the musical.
There is no way you should even do Carrie in the first place. Like, it just, like, seems so stupid to me that we remake things that are masterpieces. I would say that Carrie is a masterpiece. Yeah. I would give it 5 stars. I'd say it's perfect. Like, the only thing I don't like about Carrie is I don't like the relationship between John Travolta and Nancy Allen.
But it's like, super, super abusive.
It's problematic and gross, and they don't really, like, touch base on it, and, like, whatever. That is also a product of its time, too. Yeah. Like, this is a movie from 1976. It's not from 2022. They would never do that in a movie now, but they like, and
slap maybe each other driving down the street,
but it's just fucking gross, and I don't like seeing it, and it's like it whatever. Maybe it, I don't know, I was gonna say maybe it makes you compassionate towards Chris's the character of Chris.
No, but you're not supposed to. Bitch, right back to it.
She's the most evil character. Oh, and like
that is one thing I want to say just before we transition. What Brian De Palma does with tension and building tension is,
oh yeah, like during the bucket,
is just so like iconic, and through like how it just builds, like it, because it, the entire prom thing, that entire chunk of the movie starts off as like, you're like, you know, something's gonna happen, of course, because you've seen the poster,
right?
You know, yeah.
This is one of those things where, like, almost like Pet Sematary, like we knew
we knew
the shit that was gonna go down,
right?
And to see how it goes down,
exactly. And so you come in with that tension already, you know, like something's going to happen at the prom, and how it builds gradually, especially, and then it's with them dancing with like that weird kind of confusing vibe that you get from it.
So romantic, and
it's so romantic, but like it looks really cool, and you're just like, but this, something just feels off, you know. And then
not just the homemade stars that they did that are all janky.
They're so cute. You know,
the homemade stars. It's yes, and it's definitely like the three perspectives happening at the same time,
right?
And that's how he uses the split screen so well.
Yeah,
and then like the teacher thinking, Miss Sue is doing something wrong,
right?
And Sue figuring out what Chris and her boyfriend are doing,
and like just like tracking the slow track of like, and then Sissy, in your like, fingers, yeah,
Carrie's
like,
looking at the teacher, like everyone's looking at the wrong person,
yeah,
and making the wrong decisions except for Sue,
right? Yeah,
and then exactly. Sue ends up getting kicked out, you know, and then all the
and
shit
she
goes
can't
down.
Save anyone.
Really well done. Like, it's, you know, like my favorite part of the entire movie is that, like, right before it happens.
Is that crazy, crazy just amount of tension and how they just demolish everyone.
Yeah. Speaking of demolishing everyone.
Oh, yeah.
Let's talk about the new Carrie.
The new one. We're not going to talk about 2002. We're not going to. Just kidding.
What, the TV about. One?
I was gonna. What?
What? Which one? 2002.
I take it back. Are you talking
about the TV movie?
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. There was a TV movie. I don't think TV movies even count.
It was
2002 is not 2022, where TV movies are now nominated for Oscars. Like, right. 2002, this wasn't meant to be some work of art. 2002 was like Angela Bettis, who's also in Girl Interrupted, who also got to go and hang out and drink with Angelina Jolie and every night and go Interrupted.
She didn't stay in the mental.
Horror geeks know her as May. She's like incredible in May. And what you should do is do yourself a favor and don't ever watch the K remake and just watch May. Because it's great. The villain, the Chris in this one is Emily DeRavin from Lost, who's like the little Australian pregnant girl. Like, someone took my baby, okay? That girl. I love her. Again, if you want to see Emily DeRavin be incredible, you can either watch Lost, which I highly recommend, or you can watch that show. Fuck, what was that called? About aliens. Roswell. There's this show called Roswell. That's like Katherine Heigl and Emily DeRavin is in that too.
That's a good show.
Also, sort of a little bit of a villain in that. So if you want to see but I want to see her do something different, don't watch the other Carrie. Just watch Roswell.
Yeah.
Ta-da!
Done.
And then move to 2013. So we just watched Carrie for the first time in a long time. Last night.
We did.
And it was really hard to not talk about it afterwards because we had so many feelings.
We had so many feelings.
But I really, really felt like we should do that in this moment in time.
Okay.
So we're going to talk about what we thought.
Yeah. Okay. All right.
We both already kind of like leaked out like when it was happening. Like, fuck, this is better than I remember.
Yeah.
And that goes for a considerable amount of the runtime.
Seven-eighths of the movie.
It is better than I remembered. It is. So if you did watch it like me when it first came out and then cursed the theater and tried to do your own telekinesis and burn it down.
Right.
Give it another chance. Actually, for the first like three quarters, I'd say it's actually really well done.
It's different. It sets a different tone. It's not campy at all.
Yeah, no.
There's no camp.
Not on purpose.
Right. You know, I mean, it is dark and it's we say brutal all the time, but I mean,
because we're a horror podcast and horror is often brutal.
Yes.
If we were a romantic comedy podcast and we said, that movie was brutal, that would mean something completely different.
It means that the mom died of cancer.
And Kate Hudson didn't get to do the third act.
Yeah.
Her best friend wore the same color dress as her at her wedding party. That was brutal. But yes, in horror films, like the brutality is like kind of like this darkness, like this meanness to things, you know? Whereas some movies we find fun.
Mm-hmm.
Like fun horror.
Yeah.
Some horror is more brutal. I would say the original Carrie is very much a fun movie. Like, it doesn't make you feel like shit when it's over. You don't like.
Right. And
it doesn't ruin your day. Some horror movies.
And De Palma did that on purpose. Like, the guy's trying on the tuxedos.
He made light moments on purpose. There's pretty things to look at and stuff.
Da, 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 da.
A lot of the remake of Carrie is purposefully kind of ugly in tone and has jump scares in it. And it starts with mental illness, like right off the bat, you know?
And because in the original, you kind of see that maybe from Carrie, like not being fully adjusted, she's not fully there. I feel like in 2013, it is hands down the mother who is bonkers, undiagnosed.
We can say the intro changing it from being like doing the plug it up scene,
right?
And which is still there, but like instead doing like an origin story,
right?
Well, and showing, you know, her being the youngest Julianne Moore giving birth to the original 16 and pregnant or whatever.
Oh my god, yeah. Yeah, I didn't know I was pregnant.
Yeah.
It was
a surprise to her that she's having a baby by herself in her bed. I didn't remember that happened. And yeah, they like do like this wonderful acting scene. Like she's so well, Julianne Moore is such a boss. And we talked about Julianne Moore last week a lot, like last episode, and all of that still holds true. I will just say my biggest takeaway from this is that I wish I had a thought. The more I like percolated on it, I feel like certain actors are so good that directors are scared of them.
Yes.
And are not, especially, I mean, this was directed by Kimberly Pierce, who did Boys Don't Cry, who is a really, really good director. But I feel that she's really good with young actors. She's a youngish director. She was a youngish director.
Yeah.
She's queer. She's mm-hmm. like, you know, very respectful, like, and whatever. I feel like someone of Julianne Moore's caliber, especially when she stepped into this movie, like she's already an Oscar winner. She's already like, she's major. Julianne Moore is a major actress.
Yes.
And she's has hundreds of, you know, she's so much experience. And even if you're Julianne Moore, you need a director to be like, this works, this doesn't work.
Uh-huh,
give me right. more here. Give me less here. And I feel I've seen this in other movies too, where I feel like I'm like, this is just a person just not wanting to, like someone like Gary Oldman has this happen a lot, where it's like,
you gotta reel him in.
You can tell the director's scared of him and just doesn't want to, like, or Johnny Depp or someone, they're intimidated. Like, just because you're an incredible actor doesn't mean you don't need direction. That's what director's jobs are. And I think that Julianne Moore didn't get that.
Oh.
Like, that's my guess. Like, Julianne Moore is at an 11 the entire movie.
And so, I mean, you can say the same about Piper Laurie, but it was a campy movie. It's so
completely that, different vibe. You yeah, know, like, you it's know? Not... With Julianne Moore, it was almost exhausting.
It, yeah.
Like, it's exhausting. And Piper Laurie, it's invigorating. You right. know? And it's like a thing that we talked about last time, too. Like, the Julianne Moore does this thing where she's ballsy and she just takes things that most people would say no to. Like, this part is so iconic. She
took this part and slammed her head.
She did it again. Do you remember, guys, when we were talking about Julianne Moore slamming her head against the window? She does that on her own hand, on her walls, on the closet doors. She hurts herself throughout the entire movie in this.
And it's much more clear. I mean, I feel like it's more like insinuated in the original, but it's blatant, like, as to why she's doing that is to manipulate her daughter.
Or she's, you know? I mean, she's a cutter too.
And she's a cutter, which is like a whole nother, like, which is like a whole nother level of it.
I mean, what do they call it? Cause you've had a religious background upbringing and I haven't as much, but what is it called when like the people do like, they're very religious, like whip themselves.
Oh,
to be closer to God. You know what I mean?
Right. Yes. That
I kind of got that vibe that she was like doing that in a much darker, weirder way, like putting knitting needles and stuff like in her legs. And
I thought seam rippers. I thought that that's just because she was so, I mean, there, I think that's because her brain was just so tweaked and her anxiety and paranoia was so off the fucking charts. Like, that's what it was forcing her to do. I don't think that it was, like whipping herself with a cat of nine tails as like,
I just thought it was kind of like, it seemed like maybe it was like, cause I mean, they at least point out in this one that all the Bible entries are not.
I know. Yeah. She's like, that's not in the Bible.
Yeah. They don't really say that in the first movie, even though they also are fake in the first movie. But like this, at least they point out like, hey mama, you're making up your own Bible. Like none of this is even in the Bible.
Right. Yeah.
Which I liked. I liked that they kind of brought that out. I also felt like, but yeah, I felt like it's very famous that in the original Carrie, when Piper Laurie is getting stabbed and turned into like her Saint Sebastian
yeah.
pose, that she had the idea to have it like she's having an orgasm and that this is like the ultimate pleasure for her.
Right.
And it's such a cool death scene because of it. And it's also really uncomfortable, but it's like, it's so well done. So I thought maybe Julianne Moore was kind of doing a play on that too, where it was like some kind of like the release. You know,
right. mm-hmm.
just like a lot of people that do self-harm stuff, it's like it feels better. They get like emotions out. They can feel the way they do on the outside as they do on the inside. That's why they hurt themselves and cut themselves, right. you know. I thought maybe it was part of that, or like flagellation. That's what it's called when yes. you like beat yourself, right? So that was interesting. I also think right off the bat, you see that Carrie is very telekinetic and that she... is quite
okay with it.
That it happens a lot. Like, it's right. like something that's a very, very much a huge part of the movie. And like, and it happens in the, like the bathroom, like in the shower scene, which it doesn't in the original. It happens.
Yeah, it does.
She doesn't bang. She makes a light go out, but she yeah. doesn't make all the fucking tampons like fly away from her.
Oh, right, right.
Push a teacher. Like, she's a powerful, like.
She's a powerful little witch.
You're a witch, you know? Yeah, she like, she has these powers right off the bat.
Yeah.
And they're bigger, you know, like, or when the, like, the principal is talking to her in the original movie. And
she cracks the entire water cooler.
Yeah, in the original movie, it's just like an ashtray that she bangs to the side. Right. And it's mad because he keeps calling her Cassie.
She, right.
It's Carrie. But yeah, like, in this, it's like a whole fucking water cooler explodes. And multiple things in the room are going
on. That's
off.
Like the only scene in the movie that in 2013 to where she kind of has embodies that same character that Sissy Spacek does. Mm-hmm. I feel like those two kind of lived in the same place in that scene. That's
yeah.
it.
Yeah. They're very
and,
similar.
And if you, and anywhere else besides that, like she's always wearing, like, I don't know if they had a changing in wardrobe department or something. Cause then like, she never looks like that the same again. She, I think she's also, I guess, discovering what she can do. So she's
changing.
Yeah.
It's funny how much more I liked Chloe Grace Moretz in this viewing than when I first watched it.
Yeah. Cause you,
I really could not stand, I mean, I don't want to like bash on an actor, but like, I just didn't, she wasn't feeling Chloe Grace Moretz when early on, like, and she kept popping up and stuff. But that's not true. Cause I really did like, I liked her in Kick-Ass a lot and I liked her as much as I could like her. Okay. So here's the jam. She was in the remake of Let the Right One In, which was like one of my favorite fucking vampire movies of the new generation. Like the original Swedish film is one of my favorite movies
and
of the
2000s. So beautiful.
So good. So I was livid that they were remaking it and they remade it like a couple years later, like just to have it in English. Mm-hmm. And I was like, this is bullshit. And the remake stars Chloe Grace Moretz as the vampire. And the nerdy boy is this boy that's up for all the Oscars this year.
Is that kid?
Is the gay kid from Power of the Dog.
Oh, I didn't realize.
Cody Smith McGee, right? McPhee? I don't remember.
Cody.
Cody. So it's Cody and Grace are like the little kids in that movie.
Okay, yeah.
It's a really well-made movie. The remake isn't bad at all. And like, and the acting is really good and she's really good in it.
Yeah.
I just hated that it existed. Like, I was very, it was right in the gamut of like, we're going to remake every goddamn movie we can.
Right.
Like any movie that's in another language, any movie that was made more than 5 years ago, any movie that like maybe wasn't.
We're going to make it in America. We're going to make it better.
And every classic. I'm fucking amazed they didn't remake certain things, you know, like in that time period, there was like very few holy things that weren't touched, you know, like everything got remade. And then, so yeah, she did that and she did Carrie. And I was like, my fucking God, like get some original roles. Since then, she has done all sorts of shit that's like different. And as you know, but the audience doesn't know, she's a boss bitch on Twitter and she stood up to Kim Kardashian. And I think it is or maybe it was on Instagram. Either way, she went on social media and went out and Kim Kardashian had the fucking balls to like make fun of her wearing just her sweat to get coffee
or something. Yeah.
And she just went off about like how she should be using her platform and like how to lift women up instead of knocking women down. And I just thought she was a boss. And I was like, and it switched the way I see her. Like now I'm like, yeah, she's a fucking badass boss. And she is a really good actor. She's easily one of the best actresses in her generation. She just like, I was just prejudiced against remakes and I was getting I was at my wit's end.
Understandable. There was a lot of them.
And she was remaking movies I really loved.
Right.
She's also turned up in the Suspiria remake too, just to like she's throw mad. Out. But her character is like almost a original character. Like it's a completely different type of character than even exists in the original movie.
Oh, cool.
So she's not really bagging on anything in that. And she's like the first like victim. You just like a very different type of role for her. So, so she has done like three horror remakes, but, and also when Suspiria was announced, I was like, fuck everyone. I'm like so angry.
Everything.
This movie's the best movie I ever made. And it's nothing like the original and it's also a really good remake. So at least if she's in remakes, they're good remakes. That's something I hadn't really thought of. Like, I don't know that Carrie, I would say, is a good remake. It's a three quarters a good remake. But
I mean, it is a product of its time.
So, like, what else do we love? Like, okay, we love Judy Greer being in it is great.
She's just in everything. And also, I mean, like, I just never put the two and two together.
And Maddie never really realized that Judy Greer is, like, an omnipresent thing in our lives.
I just loved Archer. I just never knew that that was her. I saw her name every single time I watched Archer, and I was like, oh, I wonder. But
her voice is so distinct.
It's so distinct, but I couldn't see it, you know?
She's so different looking as that character.
Yeah, she's a secretary who likes to get choked out. So now whenever I see her in all these movies, I just think of her being like the secretary that wants to get choked out. So,
so I'm of the gay generation that I was introduced to Judy Greer in Jawbreaker, like most people. Yeah, like, it's Violet.
Yes, Violet.
Fern Mayo turned Violet.
Yes.
And TBH, I hated her in that movie. Like, I despised that performance. Like, I was just really like, this woman can't act. Like, what the fuck is this character? Because there's a lot of acting issues in Jawbreaker, like, in general. Like, it's just, like, not... It doesn't hold up as being, like, a great... When Rose McGowan's amazing in it, and everyone else, I feel like, is just, like, we don't know what kind of movie this is.
Because teenage dream.
But, And I like almost everyone in it and everything else that they're in. But she has turned out to be so perseverant and just turns up in everything. Like,
she's going to have a Lifetime Achievement Award, and I'm all here for it.
She's incredible. Judy Greer is great. And we'll end up talking about her again because she's in so many fucking movies. Everything. And she's in a lot of horror films. Like, she's in all the Halloween Kills movies. Well, not anymore. But she was.
She was selling lunch meat for a while.
What?
Yeah.
After Halloween?
Before.
Oh, I was like, did things get that hard that quickly?
I don't know. Yeah, she was doing commercials for, like, turkey slices.
Oh, yeah. I mean, she worked with Jamie Lee Curtis. She knew. She learned.
Yeah, right?
Sell yogurt.
Do it.
Ups and downs, baby.
Ups and downs.
I like very much that they had an actress play the gym teacher. I like Betty Buckley in the original, but I like that they had an actress play the gym teacher that could have quite possibly had a somewhat similar bullying experience when she was in high school.
Yeah.
Like, Judy Greer comes off as she would be a nerd.
Right.
And there's little moments where they show her nerding out. And I was like, she has a personal attachment to this kid.
Yeah.
That would have been like her. You know, there's things that they do to tie up or like give reasons why certain things happen, because in the first movie, it's not really explained why a lot of things happen. And it's okay in that movie because it's so much style and so much art. This kind of fleshes it out, which I've actually appreciated a lot. They do the same thing with like, okay, so one reason why, like, why does the teacher give so much of a shit that they did this to this girl that she's like making it her mission to make it better?
Right.
I think it makes sense if the teacher was kind of nerdy too.
Mm-hmm.
Super smart. They also give a reason why Sue and Tommy would want to help Carrie in the first place. Like, it's implied in the original that, like, she feels bad.
Uh-huh.
But Amy Irving never really gets to have, like, much to do. Like, as far as, like, besides the end.
Yeah.
Like, she doesn't really have a ton to do in the movie. They flesh out those characters a lot more in this.
They do. Yeah.
Also,
yeah.
Like, the guy taking her to prom, which is Tommy Ross or whatever. That, like, as much as Ansel Elgort is problematic or whatever, his version of Tommy, like, you believe it more, sort of.
Right. You do.
I saw the original Carrie, I think half of what made that part kind of suspenseful to me is that I kind of thought he was in on it.
You never knew.
And I was like, they're all going to do this. I didn't trust popular people at all when I was a kid watching this. And I was like, they're all gonna do it. That blonde curly haired boy he's in on this shit. And like, I like that they play around with the like, is Sue part of it or is she not in the original? Whereas in this, it's very much clear that she's not.
She's not, yeah.
But there's all these other options that happen once you realize that she's not, that they don't get to use in the first movie because they have to like push her out of there to make the finale happen.
Yeah.
And in this, you know, she's not part of it. And it's heartbreaking to see somebody else trying to help
and not be able to do
it and not be able to do anything to help it. Like it's really well done. So I really appreciated that they get to flesh out them. And they also flesh out Chris and Billy's relationship, like their couple. Is way less disgusting than they are in the first
movie. Oh, yeah. I mean, it's still super fucked and super.
I mean, Billy's still the hottest guy in the movie, just like John Travolta's is in the first one. I'm like, why do I like all these bad boys, you know?
Bad boy.
Bad boy, kill this pig for me.
Mm.
See, I told you that was my sexy voice, you guys. I wasn't kidding.
It's not.
You mean Billy.
I want to talk about some things I really did not like about this movie.
Yes.
Well, let's just say from one seamstress to another.
Oh. You guys.
Things were whack.
You might think we were watching
Rocky
Horror Picture Show. We were watching this last night with the amount of like audience participation Maddie was having with the sewing
machine. Oh my God. Well, okay. First off, Julianne Moore does not know how to lay out a pattern on a piece of fabric. There was so much wasted space. And I was like, this is just not how it goes. They had two different sewing machines that were obviously very, like, when you first see that, when it opens up, there's a sewing machine sitting on the table that's like a home sewing machine. Who, I literally was just about to say, who has more than one sewing machine? And then I thought,
we have three.
There's like four in this house. So then there's me, who would have one like that. But then when Carrie starts making her dress, she's using an industrial machine, which looks just like this, right behind us. You can't see it, but Chris can.
Yeah.
Petals don't have to be moved like this, up and down. Petals don't get...
Maddie is making like a little princess wave with his hand right now for all of
you. Like, you know, like old-timey like sewing machines from like 1800s and early 1900s where you have to physically pump your foot.
Like a Sleeping Beauty, like a spinning wheel?
Yeah. You don't have to do that anymore because they're electric. Like, literally never had to do that. That really made me upset.
Damn you, sewers. Also, I like that, like, the mom worked at a
dry cleaners.
Yeah, that made sense.
Mm-hmm.
Just thought of that. Sorry, that's not something that we don't like, but I just realized that happened in the movie.
Like she was at a dry... It gave her a job. It gave her, like...
So instead
she
of just going door-to-door
for the Jesus. Church. Yeah. You know, it gave her...
I'd like to talk to you about our Lord Jesus.
And it says she was, like, super, super talented, you know? And it's...
It's godless times. Object to that. Sorry. What else about the sewing stuff was wrong? Did you catch
the pedal lamp? Yeah, there was two different machines. It just really made me upset about.
Do you think that she used telekinesis to make her dress?
Well, it showed that she was, because she wasn't actually pushing the foot pedal down, but it was pumping by itself. But you would just hold the pedal down. It was obviously specifically so. It was.
It could show her doing.
It was a device saying that she could do it. Like, I get why.
It's like, we know she could float a bed and make her mom stand still.
She can fly herself out of prom.
Oh my God. Don't spoil prom already.
Oh, sorry.
No, I'm just kidding. Okay, I liked most of the stuff early on, but I will say that what gets my goat about this movie. Ugh, and they use it a little bit in the beginning too, but like, oh my God, the use of CGI in this movie is ridiculous.
Oh no, yeah.
There's so much of it and it's so not needed and very not well done in a lot of cases. This is something that kind of happens from this time period. Like, I'd say from like 2005 to like 2015, there's a lot of unnecessary CGI. It's like just because you can do it doesn't mean you should. Just because a dress is in your size doesn't mean you should wear it, you know? Like, yeah. And that's what they do with CGI so much in these movies. It's just like, well, we could just do this. Let's just do this. And you're like, why? And I'm like, because.
Because it's there, we spent money on it. Mm-hmm. You know, or we're going to spend half of our budget on the CGI. That's not that good.
And they're really not that good. Really not good at making cracks look real. They're really not good with blood. It like it just is overdone.
The entire thing. I mean, like it was in the entire thing of, oh, the blood's falling the wrong way. It's dripping up,
which is the worst effect of the movie. And it doesn't look good.
It doesn't look good.
It's unnecessary.
Yeah, it's.
There was so much. Yeah, it's mostly the CGI blood and the CGI glass. That stuff was really getting to me after a while.
Yeah.
Something else I don't like is and I know you feel different. I didn't like the character of Chris in this one. And I don't know if it was an acting thing or just the way the character was written, but
I thought that she was.
For being the villain that she's supposed to be, I thought she was kind of a pussy. Like,
I liked that because it showed it in the way that it was just like she's all this talk and all this game, but she has nothing to back it up with. And she's always just going to call daddy.
Yeah.
You know,
I mean, maybe that's fine. I think maybe I just love that's the problem with remaking something that's really well done is you're going to compare like everything that's the same.
I mean, I thought that the Chris in the original was much better.
Yeah. Nancy Allen just does such a good job in the original that she's such an evil little bitch, you know, like that you can't wait. And then this Chris gets her comeuppance much more, because I would say that is maybe a negative of the original, is that Nancy Allen and John Travolta's death scene is like boom and it's over.
But it was like their car just like really blew it up.
Yeah, like I mean, it is like real. It's all fucking on screen, and that's why it's better. But like it, but they don't get. She deserved a better death scene.
Right.
You know, it's like when they killed Cersei in Game of Thrones by like crushing her with some rocks.
And you're like, what?
And we're like, no, the dragon she needs to eat to her.
Suffer.
I want to see a sword fight and the dragon eat her. Like, it has to be something good. I
wanted to see go inch by inch by inch.
Fuck. And it's like, yeah, it's just like, it's just over. Like, that's like Chris and Billy's death in the first one. In this one, it's brutal.
It is, yes.
And
it incorporates himself.
It didn't seem as well deserved because she didn't seem like such a bad guy. You know?
Right.
Like,
that makes
like I felt almost bad for her. Like when you see like her head like through the windshield and he's like, I felt bad. I was like gross. You know, like
yeah.
She's just a little dumb teenager, you know? And what she does in the movie doesn't seem that far fetched from like shit that I've seen other kids do. Like kids
What kids do nowadays, especially like the incorporation of filming it and posting it up like that.
You're right. Like I feel like they made that be like, but look how bad she is. She filmed it. I was like, if this happened now and there was a bunch of evil little girls in the bathroom, like they'd all be filming it. Like it would be 15 videos that were up because everyone wanted the content, not just one.
That really would have been like it wouldn't have been like nationwide news because it's. Two, you can't mention a menstrual cycle, like men freak out. They can't handle that. But I mean, that would have been a huge headline.
Yeah.
You know, like college admissions would be, she's right when she was saying that like college admissions could be fucked up, like based on something came from. Something
then
like
maybe
that.
I mean, it's hard to remember, like, cause it was like almost 10 years ago, but like, it's interesting. Like, would that have been? Yeah, it's like the fact that she filmed it was the big, like, you're the bad kid.
Yeah.
And like, now I feel like the world's maybe darker that all of those kids would have been filming it and everyone would have had their phone on them.
Right.
So, yeah, I don't know. I don't know that she deserved to have her face. Like, the kids are all going to die. But that's also a thing that maybe didn't like is that when it does all come push to shove in it,
not everybody dies.
Not everybody dies.
Yeah.
And I just a fraction.
I didn't like that.
Yeah, I didn't like it either.
It lessened the stakes of what she did. It didn't make it, you know, I mean, it's when she just kills the entire school, you know, like it's everyone. And there's no coming back from that, you know?
Yeah.
And
it needs, because, yeah, this almost seems like she could maybe have gone.
And then with this one, she just looks more evil when she's doing it. Like she's tapped into the bar. She's like some crazy dark phoenix, you know?
Yeah, that she was dark phoenix.
Yeah.
Because you were like, she's now a superhero.
Yeah, she's like, okay, she's, yeah.
And I'm like, yeah, she's dark phoenix. And we all know from multiple opportunities and multiple failures, dark phoenix doesn't work on screen. So it was like the second the bucket part is supposed to happen at prom,
right,
is when everything goes to shit in this movie, like, and it's it's kind of crazy that it's like pretty well done from the most part, and then boom, the most iconic part, somebody please sweet Jesus write me a message and tell me why they filmed that bucket falling down 5 times. Like it was a super cut of like, look, the bucket's falling. Whoop, it fell again. It fell again. It fell again.
Because it took 5 times to fucking knock Tommy out.
So they're going
to
do it over and over again?
Yeah.
I was like livid in my brain. I'm like, you just completely ruined the most important shot of this by overindulging yourself and like putting it on over and over again. Also, it's like, let me show off that this blood isn't even real over and over and over again. Like I was like, oh my God, this is like watching Jackass or something.
But I thought that's what I've always felt like that's what would happen to blood. If it just sat there unrefrigerated, it would just coagulate.
No, it would.
And get thick and gross.
What I'm saying though is like, there's these splashes coming off of her that are like the end of like Little Mermaid on a rock, you know, like singing.
Not the mermaid on a rock.
It is exactly that shot. But like on her head. coagulated blood wouldn't do that. It looks so bad. And it's like, it look at it look bad from five angles. And they just do it over and over and over again.
Right.
And it loses all the momentum of it. Then Chloe Grace Moretz becomes a completely different character.
I don't know where she came from. Because
he does the funniest impression of it, and I wish you guys could see it because it's like it's sort of like Scarlet Witch meets like Hocus Pocus. It is very witch vibes, like with her big red contact in her eye, and like
she does this thing with her lips where it's like,
yeah, she's like half talking and half not, or like speaking in tongues,
and
her like weird like the Enchantress and Suicide Squad like kind of hula hoop dance
she's
doing with her arms.
That's yes,
it's. A choice.
And it like, was like, and how Piper Laurie was having it be like orgasmic when she was getting stabbed at the end of the original is how I felt Chloe Grace Moretz was doing it whenever she used her telekinesis. That's what it looked like. It was like,
yeah, like she was kind of into it.
Or? Yeah, it was weird. It was like she found a new buddy and it was like her telekinetic powers and it made me uncomfortable.
And so, see, while that's all happening, right? And then like, and then you're like watching the aftermath of what she's doing. I'd say about 50% of that is really effective.
Uh-huh.
Like, because in the original, the actual prom, like, deaths, it's chaos as fuck.
Right.
Like, and while they were filming it, there's all these things were going wrong. People were getting injured for real. PJ Souls was, like, deaf for 6 months after she did it.
Bust her eardrum.
Yeah, like, people, like, got fucked up doing that scene. Like, this, some of the death scenes are great. You know, like, the... Oh, I just remembered something. Like, I was going to say, like, the twins getting stampede, but I just remembered that you didn't realize they were twins last night watching it. Like, this like girl just looks so much like the other girl. Like, they're identical twins, baby. Like,
it was an entire plot.
You're making it a point. Yeah, anyway, that was super funny that you didn't know they were twins.
I was mad about our barbecue being delivered sopping wet with Dr. Pepper.
So funny. So, yeah, anyway, like, there's, like, certain death scenes that I think are really well done in that scene, and then the other the parts that just seem so silly. And like, they're like, you know, and on the silliness factor, it's all the CGI stuff. Like,
yeah,
here's the cords flying around like snakes. Like I'm in Spider-Man 2. And here's like, I'm going to choke Judy Greer and then throw her. So she's
and then
safe.
Decide and to not kill her.
I just hate it. I was like that whole part. Just like, I was like, oh yeah, this is why I left the theater like in a rage.
I really did like the people getting crushed by the bleachers.
Yeah. Because those are dangerous. Cool. They're always like, don't run up and down the bleachers because you can get hurt. But that's been done better.
Yeah.
Just watch The Faculty.
Right.
Best bleacher scene.
Oh my God, that's so good. But yeah, I mean, like, we were both livid once the movie ended.
Yeah. So from the minute that she finishes with this whole thing, I would say that, like, before she gets home, there's the car scene. The car scene is probably the last great moment of this movie. Like,
and because it's actually, and that's actually in the book.
Yeah. And there, yeah, her like exploding like gas in the whatever. So I don't remember in the book if she kills everyone in the high school or not, or if that's just in the original movie. But that's a plot detail that's important, I think.
Right. Yes.
That makes her unsavable. Repentable. You know, like you did something despicable. You killed the one teacher who really loved you. You killed like
it's that snap.
Everybody, you know, and that's what makes you she's always this big touch and go thing of like, is she a hero? Is she a villain? Because she goes through so much trauma, like she's an anti-hero.
Do you know what it's like? It's really like, you know, when you see a drag queen and doing their performance and they're going crazy and they're giving it everything and da da da. And then you see someone do that same performance, that same number, and they don't move an inch. And the person that didn't move an inch has you weeping.
Mm-hmm.
You know, that's how I feel these two different Carries were. You know, like Sissy Spacek being there, like still like just like being that force of like energy.
You feel everything in her eyes.
Yeah. And having that all come across. And then this other one, it is showing you everything. So you don't have a chance to feel it.
Yeah.
I think that's the big part that just really.
It's like the difference between Jaws and Deep Blue Sea.
I wasn't ready for that. I wasn't ready for that.
Snuck it in. So, like, yeah, right? I totally agree. And then I was really excited because Julianne Moore started the scene.
That scene.
And You might be thinking,
do you want to play it?
I was originally thinking, like, yeah, I really want to play it. But then I thought, I want to play it.
Oh.
So you're going to say, it was bad, mama.
Oh, shit. Okay.
They laughed at me. Hold me, mama. Please hold me. Can you please say those lines for me?
Hold on. Okay. It was bad, mama. They laughed at me. Hold me, mama. Please hold me.
I should have killed myself when you put it in me. After the first time, before we were married. Ralph promised never again. He promised and I believed him. But sin never dies. Sin never dies.
You can't laugh.
She laughed when she did it too. It's funny. At first it was all right. We gotta put this in my reel. Okay, but at first it was all right. We lived sinlessly. We slept in the same bed and we never did it.
I don't want to hear this. I don't want to hear this, mama.
And then that night, I saw him looking down at me that way. We got down on our knees to pray for strength. I smelled the whiskey on his breath. And he took me with his filthy roadhouse whiskey on his breath, and I liked it. I liked it. With all that dirty touching of his hands all over me. I should have given you to God when you were born, but I was weak and backslided. Now the devil has come home. And we'll pray. I just want to tell you guys I'm having a physical body reaction to saying that on my face. Like, I feel schwitzy.
Schwitzy.
Like, I started sweating.
That was
acting. I'm an actress. A real actress.
A real.
Yeah, I was going to play it for you, but I was like, why deal with, like, rights of things and stuff when I can fucking act it out myself?
Boom.
That's my favorite scene of any horror film. So if anyone ever asks me on a podcast from now on for the end of time, that's my favorite scene. It's my favorite thing. And it's maybe one of my top 10 favorite monologues of any movie in the history of time. They almost cut that shit out of the original movie.
Really?
Yeah, they were like originally like, this is changing the pacing. We're really at a point where like, she just killed everybody. We got to get you home, do the fight. And Pepper Laurie's like, no.
Yeah, you can't.
I learned that whole thing.
And
it's my favorite part of the movie. Like, it was her favorite thing to do. And she's like, we're not. I am doing that speech. And they were like, okay. And then they let her film it. And they were like, oh, yeah, we're keeping this in. Like, yeah. It's so good.
Well, like, and I feel like it also kind of goes into how she's been obsessing over this for hours and hours.
Oh, yeah. Hours for think the of entire, all those times. Like, think of the times you've time had a fight with somebody and then they
and
leave.
It's just, and it's going through your head and you're replaying.
And by the and time they get home, you're like, you're just, I've burned all my candles.
I'm you know? Done. She has been lighting these candles thinking about having sex. Like,
also, I love that, like, apparently there's about 800 candles in that scene.
That were really lit.
Yeah.
That would have been so hot.
Mm-hmm.
Like, that set would have been so hot.
And we're talking about the original, obviously, guys. In the remake. Because
if there were candles, they would have been fake.
In remake, there's like 16 candles in the scene when it's like Molly Ringwald's birthday, maybe.
Yeah.
When not
and
same.
Do you know what they do in that part? They cut her speech.
They cut like the part about the whiskey on his breath. And
I'm saying, I liked it. They cut out the best part. Like, she starts saying. Sad.
Yeah, she was doing it almost verbatim. And I was like, yes, Julianne Moore, yes. And then I had this whole thought of like, this is why good movies can be remade. Is because it's kind of like, you know, like in musicals, like Wicked is still out.
Like, and it's different people's interpretation. It's
different people. And people will go. And I used to be like, well, I've never seen Wicked, but I want to see it with the original people. I don't want to see it with like these other people. But it's too late and I can't see those people. But they're probably just as good. And it's also, it's often like really fun to see someone's theater is so fun because you can
see the same
other people's interpretations of a character you already know. You know, or why Shakespeare, people love going to seashells by the seashore. Shakespeare in the park or something is because you get to see things that you already know all the words to and you see somebody else do it.
Yeah.
And their interpretation. And immediately I was like, oh, I want to see Julianne Moore's interpretation to this scene because I love this scene and I love Julianne Moore. Like, she's powerful and she could do this. And she started it and it was good. And I was like, oh, I believe this. Like, I believe she's feeling it. Yes. She's remembering it. She's smelling the whiskey. And then they cut it. And there is no coming back for me for the rest of the movie. Once you cut that scene.
It's so true, though. It's so true. And I mean, I also feel like her when she says dirty pillows was very thrown away.
It was thrown away.
Like, I see your dirty pillows.
I see your dirty pillows.
And you know, we over here at Dirty Pillows don't appreciate that.
Yeah, you better enunciate the fuck out of those pillows.
Dirty pillows. Dirty pillows. You don't throw
them. It just felt like such a whatever. And then, so like the whole, once we're at home, is kind of a shit show. Once you see like, it's like just like CGI. There is so much CGI. I was expecting velociraptors to come flying out of the closet or something. Like, it's like,
oh my God. The velociraptors.
Like, Carrie's just freaking out of the bathtub, like, which I didn't understand either. Why are you freaking out? You know what you just did. There's blood all over you. Why are you acting like you're, oh my God, there's blood on my hand? I'm like,
and again,
what is going
also
on?
Also, for both movies, why the fuck you taking a bath instead of a shower?
I don't think they even had a shower in that.
They had a shower at the beginning of the movie.
When? What? In the school?
Oh, yeah, but I mean, no.
They never show that they have a shower. I think, okay, well, to vouch for the original Carrie, I don't think that bathtub has a shower.
Okay.
I think it's just a single clawed like bathtub and by itself.
Okay.
Chloe Grace Moretz probably did.
Yeah.
But she's making weird choices. She also overacts the fuck out of that scene. Like, it's just like, it's just too much. I don't mind the bath in the original because I think that she's like, fuck it. I just killed everybody in my school.
I need to
unwind a little bit after all of this.
See, and again, it's how you play it. Like, it's how you play it.
She's also numb and dead when like, she's taking a bath.
You are like,
Chloe is like sobbing and suddenly realizing what she did or something. It's like, it's too much.
What is that called when you're, not comatose, like, thanks.
What? Who for who?
Like when you're just like completely, it's not, is it comatose? But that's like a coma, no?
Yeah, comatose is like nothing.
Like, yeah, when you're just like, I don't know. Okay, never mind.
Who are you saying is comatose? To see SpaceX?
Yeah, she's not comatose, but she's just like out of it, like in shock. Yeah. Like, you know, like.
She's beyond. She's gone. She's not home anymore. You know? Yeah. Chloe, it's like, I think what she was trying to do was like that it was like she was snapping back away from her like private dancer moment that she was having for 15 minutes and like was like realizing what she had done and like what was happening. But what she had done wasn't as bad as what Sissy Spacek did in the first place. Like, I didn't.
Yeah.
She's like, oh, I killed some of the people in my school.
Well, I mean,
it's America. That happens every day.
But it's also like one of those like catatonic. That's the word I was looking for. There we go.
Catatonic.
Yeah. No, I mean, like, Sissy Spacek is in this kind of catatonic, murderous rampage the entire time. And Chloe is kind of continuing to do it and in different ways. And is just kind of crossed over into like, hi, I'm a murderer.
Yeah.
Like, you know, and I'm vengeful and I'm a bad guy, you know?
Mm-hmm. Absolutely.
And it's not like... So it's just kind of one of those, I mean, I guess fine. You could kind of like have that. I don't know. I don't know. You could have that kind of like remorseful snapback, but I don't believe it.
And it doesn't even matter because then the wave of CGI that happens afterwards is something out of a Pixar movie.
I did, however.
Like, it's like, oh, mom is going to get stabbed by everything. But first, it's going to hover over her face and be like, hello. Like, it's like so ridiculous.
I liked this their little fight that they had, like when she stabbed her like super close, because and it mimics that first opening scene when she almost stabs her in the mm-hmm. thing, when she almost like stabs the baby. She's like, back to the dirt.
And, yeah, if she hadn't just ruined my monologue.
I know, right? You probably would have. I did, however, I did kind of like when mom, she actually did Lori making stabbed.
The cross things with the knife is scarier, and she does so much less. It's not like a Marvel movie where they're like bouncing around on the floor and like,
yeah.
Do you know what I mean?
It's like Piper
Laurie stabs her once,
right,
and then follows her around and is making the like Father, Son, Holy Spirit with the knife,
yeah,
over and so over again, and that's scarier than Julianne Moore doing jump scares and being like, rah, and then like acting like they're in the WWE
again. It's like there's less multiple moments.
Yeah, there's
less
multiple moments
more.
Where I kept thinking Julianne Moore could never do any of these things. And really, because she looks really thin and really like
frail
yeah. in the movie. And Chloe looks like she could take her from the very beginning.
Right.
Where she's like, get in your closet. I'm like, this girl's twice your size. Like, she could just be like, mom, fuck off. Like, even without telekinesis.
I mean, I really did. There's one thing that I did like when she crawls out of that fucking closet door.
Well, yeah. She's like doing her shining moment.
And that's exactly what Julianne Moore thought. She's like, this is my shining moment.
Yeah.
And do you know what? Sissy did it. I want to do this myself. That's going to be my arm.
Yeah.
That's going to be my arm.
So stupid. I mean, we could throw in that like it's good that they like do the stoning thing originally.
They finally got through that, you know, because it's and I mean, like, it's funny because what Sissy Spacek did, she actually studied how people looked and how their body kind of went when they got stoned.
Right. Well, we haven't told them.
What?
We're just having our conversation by ourselves with that information.
Oh, no. But that was, originally I was saying that was some of the, oh.
Originally in the film, in the first film.
Right.
And in the novel, guys, hi, we forgot you were here for a second. Originally in the novel, and originally in the first film, it was supposed to, you know how the house kind of just like goes like, and just like starts to fall into itself and just like gets eaten into the
You're
ground.
Like, what's going on?
Like kind of exactly how the Poltergeist house does in the end. Like that was kind of like an oopsie magoopsie because we can't do the ending. Because if you look closely, you can see these little like, there's like boulders and rocks, which look like it's just pieces of the building falling.
Right. I always thought that it was just pieces of plywood.
But it was originally meant to be
rocks.
Like the way that witches were stoned back in the day for witchcraft.
Yes.
And for being other was happening to them.
Stones, you know, because falling from the sky.
These unholy things that were happening. But that still wasn't clear, and so they kind of blew it. It's also why there's a fuck ton of rocks at Carrie's grave.
Mm-hmm. Yeah,
in the end of the movie, and why Carrie has to put her hand through, why Sissy ran through all these rocks to put her hand up.
And that's how the book ends.
So in the original, that was like supposed to happen, but they couldn't do it for whatever reason, because it didn't look realistic, budget, whatever. And then the new one, they actually do that. You notice there's like a fuck ton of stones going through, and they do mention like stoning witches multiple times in the movie.
Yes.
So it was like made to be more of a plot. Fun thing too, like they just keep not putting it in, but there is, I believe in the television version, the mom is originally not supposed to be like stabbed by everything in the kitchen and made to look like Saint Sebastian. That's never in the book. That's not whatever. That's like a thing that's in the original that they changed, and then they made it again in the remake. But in the book, she gets her heart stopped. Carrie reaches through her psychically and stops her heart.
And that's what they do in the musical.
Mm-hmm. They do it in the musical, and they do it in the I believe in the TV version, which has Patricia Clarkson as the mom, which is actually really good. That's the best part about the TV version is Patricia Clarkson.
Okay.
Another feisty redhead.
Feisty.
I like that they give like the crazy redhead of that Malou.
I want to see. Play the mom. Do you know? I want to see read that monologue.
Kitty.
Our friend Kitty.
Oh,
I want to see it. Our own personal feisty. We have a dear friend who's an amazing actress. I want to see her feisty redheaded take on Piper Laurie's speech.
Mm. I want to hear Joan Cusack do it.
Yes. Well, that'd be camp.
I want to hear Sarah Paulson do it.
Oh.
I think there's a lot of people that could play Carrie's mom. And I think that like you don't have to be one thing or another. There's a lot of ways that it can be played too. Mm-hmm. So I don't mind if they want to make this every 10 years, but
I don't mind.
There's some shit you need to do. Like you need to stop taking so much CGI and making that important. You know, right. Like I know that nowadays we don't do old movie tricks anymore, but we can still make things fly around in the air and look a little bit more realistic.
Right.
Blood doesn't need to drip upwards. There's no reason to do that. Blood always looks fake if you use fake blood. We have not mastered that yet. We need to talk to Pixar and find out how they make liquids look real, because we don't seem to know outside of those movies how to do that.
And Lord knows Pixar's not going to make anything with blood.
I wish they did. Oh my God. I would give anything to see Pixar make a fucking Carrie movie. In fact, you could say that Turning Red being about menstruation and stuff is sort of like the new Pixar movie is their version of a Pixar Carrie movie.
Okay.
It's a girl that transforms when she goes through puberty. She starts bleeding and then turns into a panda whenever she gets stressed out. Sort of Carrie.
Kind of is.
Yeah.
Well.
And she has a fanatical mom who works in a temple, who like runs a temple.
Oh my God.
Oh my God. Did Pixar remake Carrie? Boom. Revelations.
Wow.
The only other iteration of Carrie that really needs to be mentioned, at least for a moment, is the fact that there was a musical based off of Carrie.
There was. I saw it.
Maddie saw a local production and not local by local New York City production.
It was in Scottsdale, Arizona.
He saw a Scottsdale, Arizona performance of Carrie and yeah. He loved it.
I thought it was really great. They follow us.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Oh, awesome. Yeah. I think the idea of having Carrie as a musical is funny. I love when they do horror movie musicals. Like
it is.
Why not? You know,
I mean, my thoughts on the musical is it is another iteration that took itself too seriously and did not make itself campy. It was a serious musical.
Yeah. No, that, Carrie needs to be funny.
And it was not funny.
I saw the Silence, the musical, the Silence of the Lambs musical. And that's
one hilarious. Of
the best things that's I've ever
hilarious.
Seen.
Hilarious. Yes. Yeah.
And it's like, of course, Silence of the Lambs is a terrifying movie, but musicals generally aren't terrifying.
Right.
So if you're going to do that, you're going to have to make fun of yourself a little bit and have fun with it. And so, yeah, if Carrie had realized that, because it's gold, there is so much gold to be had in Carrie to make it
so
funny.
Many different songs.
I like, if you're like a music writer, I will help you write the dialogue and help you make it funny, because I think that there is a lot.
What did you say? An entire song? Like, we're saying like an entire song called Plug It Up? Like,
yeah.
You like, why is that it's not an entire there? Musical number with dancing tampons.
Yeah. Oh my God. Right.
Like,
like, oh my God, just like this pad comes out and does the big belt at the end. Like, I could write this. I'm actually maybe not going to share this with any of you. I'm going to do it myself. But yeah, I think.
And then, I mean, if you rewrite the music, it could just be like, Redux, we're redoing the
character. We're reducing it. Yeah.
Yeah.
I'm taking this back since you guys took away my photos. I did like one of my first big like photo gigs in New York City was like doing promotional photography for Carrie the Musical, which was Broadway. Not the original Broadway group of Carrie the Musical, because that's like 2000. I haven't lived in New York City that long. This was their like
revival,
the revival of it.
Oh, they brought it back
and then still canceled it.
And they still still only lasted a week.
But I mean, yeah, if you want to make Carrie into a musical with singing and dancing, take some hints from some of the things that are funny that are based on scary things like Little Shop of Horrors or something right. musical. Like, it has to be funny. There's no way. We haven't mastered how to make something singy and scary. The only thing I think even counts
Jekyll
is
and
that.
Jekyll and Hyde did that.
I was going to say Jekyll and Hyde or like Sweeney Todd. Like, Sweeney Todd was Sweeney what Todd. I was thinking of. But even that has humor in it.
Right. I mean, Phantom's creepy, but like.
Not scary, though.
Jekyll and Hyde is scary. And
is it good?
Yes.
Okay. Well, then I marked me wrong. That it can be done.
It can. It
shouldn't be. Like, you know, if you're going to remake things that we all know, like.
But I mean, like the story of Jekyll and Hyde is terrifying.
I mean, the story of Carrie is terrifying, too. Like.
But it's always been campy.
Yeah. I mean, yeah, there's no reason to remake a Stephen King thing and put it on Broadway if you're not going to make it funny. Like, just as a rule. Unless you're doing, like, Shawshank or, like, Stand By Me. Like, there's no real reason to, like, be a musical Stephen King movie.
And let's just not do a Broadway play of Shawshank Redemption. I'm okay without that.
What would be another good musical of a Stephen King movie?
Misery.
You didn't even have to think about that. That was like already ready. Yeah, that would be funny. Yeah, that would be really funny.
That'd be really like,
cock-a-doody, cock-a-cock-a-doody. You didn't get out of the cock-a-doody car. Yeah. Oh, could be really good. Pet Sematary already has a theme song from the Ramones, so you could, like, that could lend itself into it too. I don't want to be buried in a pet cemetery. So I could, like, start with that. Beware the road. The wheels on the bus go round your kid. Round your kid.
No! Oh, no. We've lost all control.
I think, I think I'm really glad that we finally got to talk about our favorite girl.
Carrie and our favorite White.
I hope you guys enjoyed it.
Yeah, let us know what you think.
Or don't.
Or don't.
No. No, it's just that we always say that. And I feel like people don't really send us emails like with their you guys are very polite, I think. Because we know how many listeners we have and you guys are all wonderful. But nobody ever complains about anything.
And yeah, you guys are great.
It's okay. You can complain to us sometimes, too. Sometimes complaints make you feel seen. You know?
Constructive criticism.
They're like, stop laughing so much. And we're like,
that's not going to happen. it's just not going to happen.
Do an episode about romantic comedies.
Nope. That's not going to happen either. But you can follow us on all the things. You know, Instagram, Twitter.
Dirty Pillows Podcast at the Dirty Pillows.
Yeah. And please, you know, if you can just subscribe and leave us just a little review, you know.
Little reviews feel nice.
Rate, review, subscribe.
You can find us personally on Instagram. Mine's at Chris Fox, KrysFox. Same thing on Twitter. Or Maddie Glitterati.
Maddie_glitter.
Yeah. There's one T at the end, two in the beginning.
Yeah.
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 Mama, they all laughed at me. You were right. But you know what?
What?
Regardless of how scary you've been and how many times you beat me and all and put me in a closet and told me that my boobies weren't good enough or that they were too showing or didn't tell me about periods and I got made fun of.
I just
really want you to know, Mama, that I love you to death.